Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Okay. Welcome to a Shootin' the Shit. Eagle-eyed listeners, that's not how eyes and ears work.
That doesn't help you in this
eagle
regard.
Eagle-eared listeners? That's not a thing. Do eagles hear well?
What would it be? It would be...
Okay, asshole. Alright, guys, we're doing an in-person recording. There's going to be dogs. But more importantly, there's going to be Kenny.
Hello, I'm here.
Kenny, do you want to tell listeners a little about yourself? I mean, obviously you're a Star Trek correspondent, but...
Yeah, that's been my only engagement in the podcast so far, but we've been wanting to do a Shootin' the Shit, and here I am. Yeah, I'm excited. We hang out together weekly, so I feel pretty comfortable with y'all.
Yeah.
Love the pod, of course.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. The Mongolian Revolution... series was really good. Yeah,
awesome. Thanks.
That was a fun story.
Yeah, it was. So many characters. Yeah.
There's a lot of twists.
Yeah.
Where's that Netflix series? Come on.
I know. Seriously.
Right.
Oh, hello, Kat.
Maybe once, Shogun and they're doing several historical drama pieces lately.
Yeah.
There's a lot of weird ones where like it's like half documentary, half.
Ooh.
Reenactments, yeah. I guess. I'm not. What's the word?
No, reenactments is correct. It's
like a pirate series. Like there's a whole bunch.
There's
of
one on the Ottomans. There's one on the Romans. Mm-hmm. I think they started maybe with the Romans ones. This is straight up History
was
Channel. History Channel on Netflix, okay. I think. This is Eris's favorite TV programming.
What a butt.
Sometimes we come home and she's just watching, you know, Rise of the Ottomans.
Totally. She would like that. She likes the idea of the big hats.
It's like a souped up version, though, of like what they used to do with History Channel, like Mankind, the Story of All of Us, America, the Story of Us, where you have like interviews interspersed with like, for the time, medium production sort of reenactments of things. But it's just like a shift from way higher production value on the reenactments part, I think. And the interviews are fine, but they're like less of the focus, I think, now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's funny when you start to watch a bunch of those, though, because you start recognizing people. Like Kyle was telling me, he's like, yeah, that guy played like Henry Ford a few episodes ago.
Whoa.
So now he's like just hanging out. Like,
nice.
I don't know. It's just really funny that they reuse the same set of actors. And I love thinking about that kind of stuff of like, does your agent just like know a guy? And so they're always like, hey, he's available for more History Channel work. Like, do you have a contract? Like, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, in TV in general, because you'll see like... some directors or whatever they clearly like working with these actors.
I had a weird experience the other day. Well, I think it was last night or the night before. I rewatched Kick-Ass, which I didn't realize it came out in 2010.
Jesus.
But it was like really like I remember loving it when it came out, you know, so I was like, I need to watch this again. And a few interesting things struck me about it. First of all, I think my biggest realization was, who is the mom in Downton Abbey?
Oh, the American lady?
Yeah.
I don't know her name, but...
It's like, I think it's Cora.
Cora is the name of the character.
Yeah. I don't know the name of the actor, unfortunately,
no,
but
yeah.
She was the mom in Kick-Ass.
Oh!
But she's in, like, 3 seconds of a scene, and then she dies.
What
she doesn't
fuck?
Say a word.
Okay.
He's like, and you know, I didn't have like a Spider-Man backstory. My mom died of an aneurysm at the table, and she's
just
like, he's
over.
Like telling her something about school, and she's like, and then just. I was like, wow. So that was 2010, and Downton Abbey was 2011, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or 2012 or something.
Something like that. I watched it in college, so.
So that's like her progression. That tripped me out.
That is.
I was like,
weird.
That's crazy.
I've been watching a bunch of classic musicals.
Oh, good.
I have a theory about musicals now.
Tell us
the musical theory.
Okay,
so but not like musical theory, like music.
Yeah, I'm not gonna talk about chords and shit.
Okay.
So I watched 3 classic musicals in like 1 weekend. Kyle was out of town, clearly. And so I watched Singin' in the Rain, which is like long stated as like the best movie musical. And so I was like, okay, it's supposed to be the best one. I'll watch it.
Abby likes it.
It's fine.
I've never seen it. I was just telling her because they're gonna show it at a place nearby.
The movie?
Yeah.
I liked it as a kid. I don't know.
I think like, it was fine. It was good. Yeah. There weren't as many bangers as I want. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't come away from that, like, oh, this is so stuck in my head.
Singing in the Rain is the one. But, yeah,
that's really the main one. Yeah. And, like, the Good Morning song is pretty good. But, like, that's about it.
Is
and
that even Good then, Morning? Good Morning.
Morning. Yeah.
I had okay. My coworker would always sort of sing that to the kids as they were coming in. I didn't know what really it was from.
Okay. Nice.
So, yeah, I watched that one. And then I watched My Fair Lady. That was a slog. Oh, my God.
Wow.
Just, I mean, do you know anything about the story? Give us a quick
synopsis.
Okay.
No. It's referenced in Mad Men once. That's all I know
it's
about.
It's referenced a lot. Like, Pretty Woman is basically My Fair Lady. Like, interesting. There's a lot of cultural references in it. Like, I watched it and I'm like, oh, I get it. But it is starring Aubrey Hepburn and I can't remember the other guy's. The guy's name is Rex somebody. He's very famous. And it's in London in olden times. You know. I'm going to say 1910s, maybe.
Oh, okay. I know the premise of this, right? She's like Cockney.
She's and extremely
they're trying Cockney. To get her to be like cultured.
Yes, that's it. It's, let's race this riches. Woman.
Yeah.
That's where they say the life of the knife, the life rain. Of the wife was taken by the knife or something.
They say the rain in Spain. That's the one.
Yeah, okay.
So that's it. He makes a bet. I can pass this fucking street urchin off as a lady at this big ball. Nobody's gonna know.
It's all a bet?
It's a fucking bet.
Oh, that's horrible.
That's it. A bet to change a woman. A classic plot line. Great. And it's just him being super mean to her. Like, he's a terrible teacher. Like, he brags about how good he is. But, like, all he does is, like, repeat letters at her. Like, just, he's trying to get her to say the letter A. And she's like, I. And so all he does is repeat it back at her with no fucking feedback. And I'm like, you're not a good teacher.
That's not a voice coach.
Yeah, right. Like, you're bad at this job. And eventually she has, like, just an all of a sudden breakthrough and speaks perfectly posh and blah, blah, blah.
Damn.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, they end up falling in love, and I don't understand it. It's just like, what are
Because, of course, that's what...
Because, of course. Yeah. The pacing made no sense to them. Like, this man just abused you for, like, 3 hours, because this show is fucking 3 hours long.
Oh, my God.
And then at the end, you're like, actually, I like him. Like...
That's how love worked back then in Britain.
It made me very worried. Like, are you guys okay? And then there was... what was the last one? The Music Man, which that was really good. The main song, the 76 Trombones in the Big Parade. That
song know that's where it came. Okay.
I liked the story in that one better. It was actually funny. Like, there's some really good running gags. They had the council people. The main character is like a con man, right? That's his whole deal. He's like, I'm going to sell instruments to these kids. I'm not actually going to teach them how to use them. I'm going to bounce by the time they get here. But he can kind of fake it long enough while they wait for, like, the uniforms to come in. And so every time the city council is like, hey, when you see your credentials, he manages to distract them. He's just like, you've got a beautiful pitch. Like, sing this for me. And they do. And then he eventually turns them into a fucking barbershop quartet.
Whoa.
And so he just starts, like, every time they come up to him, like, referencing a song, and they get distracted and start singing with each other. And it's really cute. And like, the joke is that, like, they used to fight all the time, and now they just, like, are obsessed with being a barbershop quartet.
Oh, that's cute.
But, so that was the best one, I would say. I'd give that one an A. Would watch
okay.
it.
Okay.
My theory, though.
Sorry. Oh, yeah.
Oh, here we go.
Back to the theory. I know, this is long. I think these were mostly a vehicle for visual spectacles.
Mm. Mm.
I think it was like, wow, guys, we got color TV.
There you go.
We got pretty decent sound now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just, like, have these big avenues for, like, the dance numbers are crazy. And I'm not, like, big into dance, so, like, I think I zoned out a lot. Like, okay, they're going to tap dance for 5 minutes. Like, I can be on my phone for a while.
Yeah.
Nice.
But I bet back in the day, that was a big fucking deal.
Yeah. I'm with you. That's someone, I saw this video that was like, I'm going to look at all the classic AFI, I think.
Mm, the best
classic films, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, Ben-Hur, this is good, but this is really long. And they're like, it's super long. It's not the best story-ish. It's like, you know, it has some good elements, but, and they were like, but cinematically, it was very impressive. Like, they did all these crazy things. And so that's what, you know, I think it's kind of like in that vein of, like, people were just, a lot of the classics, it's like, that was incredible that they were able to do that. It was, like, groundbreaking in that sense, but it's like, it was fine quality-wise, but, like...
Like, maybe the story wasn't always there. Like, Lawrence of Arabia, I felt the same way. Like, there's this phrase in film, like, every frame could be a painting.
Hmm.
And we don't really do that anymore. Like, I think everyone forgot how to do cinematography. It's just, like, a bunch of, like, if you were making a comic of that movie, it would suck because it would just be talking head, talking head, talking head over and over.
Mm-hmm.
But if you watch, like, really good films, you can learn about, like, how to frame things correctly and how to make things visually interesting. And Lawrence of Arabia absolutely did that. It was, like, it was really long, but you didn't mind because you're like, well, this is really pretty, at least.
Mm.
And same with My Fair Lady. I'm like, yeah, this story is incredibly sexist and troubling, but look at how beautiful it is. And look at the choreography and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. That's a good theory.
Thanks.
I like it. Yeah, no, I guess, like, things that were spectacular then that people were like, wow, that was so good, best movie I've ever seen. I think in a lot of ways we regularly hit those marks in most movies today. I don't know, as a progression of art or technology or whatever goes, you know. So maybe it's, like, not as exciting, you know, to us now, but...
I mean, I wonder about that because, like, with modern movies, there are still moments like that. Like, people will still be like, oh, like, Oppenheimer, you have to go see it really big or something, you know.
Still haven't seen it.
I haven't downloaded it on my iPad. It's taking up so much room. I just haven't watched it. I mean, obviously much has been said about CGI and, like, the lack of artistry that can come from that, I think. And you look at these older films and they are impressive. Are they more impressive because of the limitations? Are you just, like, impressed they got that many extras and they managed to pull it off and, like, the costumes were that detailed and wonderful?
Like, sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because especially if you're depicting, dumb way to say it, something realistic, like... It's not sci-fi or something. If it's, it's
like
to me, it's to me more artful. Like to just do it with real shit instead of like rely on CGI to get everything,
puppets instead of models, like 3D models.
I mean, even Jurassic Park like looked incredible. Like,
yeah,
it still looks pretty good if you go back to the original.
Yeah, original Star Wars. You know, it was it was models like at a small scale.
You know what I miss is matte background paintings.
Oh yeah, those are beautiful.
Background painting. Oh my god.
I think original Star Trek has some really good ones of those. Yeah.
I think we can all like pick them out now, though. Like,
yeah, of course.
They always look so like, oh, that's kind of cool. I think that's a painting.
Yeah.
But it's cooler. I don't know. I don't want to be a snob for the sake of being a snob.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's, like, more work to do all that stuff.
Totally.
So, you know, but I don't know. I just think I appreciate when people are like, we're doing it the real way because, like, we appreciate it, you know, and then they do it and it's, like, costs more money and takes longer, but you're like, damn, that's way better.
Yeah, there's something to that. I think you lose something. I mean, with CGI, I mean, one, on a labor standpoint, like, you're fucked. Like, most of those are not unionized.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, and that's the other thing, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's going to be cheaper for that reason, too. So that's not great.
I would say that for sure. But then I would also say it may be similar to, like, something very artisanally done, but it, like, you do need some technical things to, like, you know, tools and stuff to make it, like, refined. Like, we can enjoy, you know, modern, you know, very filtrated beverages, alcoholic beverages of various sorts and whatever, and it's, like, precisely dialed in. It's going to be correct and just where you want it every time.
But if you get, like, a funky farm ale.
Yeah, and it's going to have, like, the sediment, and in a lot of ways it's not going to be... like,
it's not going to be as consistent.
Not going to be as consistent or necessarily even, like, dialed into... being as good as what you want, but it's
cool. When it's good, it's really good.
Yeah.
I mean, so many things are like that. Like, I think about, like art in terms of going traditional versus digital. I was traditional for years and years and years. Didn't really commit to it until I got the iPad and I started doing that in 2017. So there is something extremely magical about pulling a line, like, just right, and you're like, that's the one. But also, like, there's so much just fucking pain and redos, and like, I just ruined a whole page. Cool, like, that was hours of work. And it's a trade-off you have to make, I guess. I don't know.
I think what y'all were saying with the labor aspect of it is, you know, finally we're gonna get around a little bit of communism at this point.
Yeah, I know, right? We've just been really shooting the shit part.
Yeah.
I don't know. That will free us to enjoy the best of the best aspects of both of these techniques, right, of traditional and technological, fuse them to whatever degree we want, take, you know, do lean into more technology mm-hmm. applications, lean into more traditional artisan techniques when we want to, without worrying about, you know, big looming exploitation above of like, oh yeah, you want to, you know, introduce this labor-saving technique, we're taking all of the surplus of that, we're, you know, automating you out of existence or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, if we, while we still have capitalism, we're going to have to deal with that shit mm-hmm. versus, you know, if we were actually in the commune, then we could freely dabble, I think, you know?
Yeah, and in a more ethical way all around, like, ecologically as well.
Ecologically, you know, out of work, it's like, you know, shit, I'm not going to be employed producing, you know, mass producing, you know, background sets for something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Like,
yeah.
You can pursue what art you want. Who's got stuff from
Who's
this
got
week?
Stuff?
Yeah.
I didn't have any stuff, sorry. It's
okay. No stuff. Nothing happened, according
Nothing
to your standard.
Nothing happened. The week just, everyone took a break. Mm-hmm.
You know what? Funny or
existential?
Utopian, you know, utopian hour.
Man, let's start with funny?
Yeah, I'm done with that. Okay. I was going to say the same thing.
All right. I got a story out of the Wall Street Journal.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're just, they're talking about the best zingers that world leaders have leveled at each other.
Okay.
Okay, that's exciting.
The headline is Ignoramus Fascist.
Who's that?
Small Penises Club. Latin American diplomacy devolves into schoolyard taunts.
Amazing.
Wow.
Wow, I wish more of diplomacy was like this. At least it's entertaining.
So this is apparently what world leaders are up to, at least in Latin America, on Twitter, on X.
Incredible.
They're all talking shit about each other.
That's great.
That's great.
So I just wanted to like highlight some of their best hits here.
Okay.
So we do have a cast of like villains, heroes to some extent, mm-hmm. you know, not as villainous characters, this sort of thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So on the villain corner, okay, the heel. All right, we've got Javier Milei.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You guys have heard of this guy.
The name yep. sounds familiar.
He's from Argentina.
Okay.
He's the right-wing guy with the funny hair.
Why do all politicians have funny hair these days?
Yeah, come on, get it together.
Well, he was, yeah, he's kind of like explicitly their Trump kind of guy.
Okay.
But he is nerdier than Trump. Like, he's literally a libertarian kind of guy.
Okay. Oh my gosh, his hair is something.
Can I see?
Yeah.
But in the same way, he was kind of like a talk show right wing kind of guy.
He looks like a weird terrier.
He looks like he's from the 70s.
Yeah, something. I was going to say, it looks like he's out of Austin Powers film or something.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the British invasion never yeah. stopped for him.
Yes. That's bizarre. I did not expect that he looked like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that was weird. Okay, tell me about this weird-haired right, yeah. man.
All right, so he's a right-winger. He's an asshole. Mm-hmm. And he talks some shit about AMLO in Mexico.
Mm, don't be coming for AMLO.
AMLO's...
He's a mixed bag.
He has some problems and criticisms and things like that, but honestly, he does come across as kind of cool.
What? He's a little based.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of left, like, within his system. Anyway, he talked some shit about him. He said, Ignoramus, amidst some other part of the tweet or whatever, and López Obrador shot back, Fascist.
Hell yeah.
Some other, they kind of jump around here at the beginning, just saying some highlights of how they're talking shit. In Venezuela, they put their foreign minister out there to talk some shit about, this was in a press conference or something, about people criticizing Nicolas Maduro, who passed a law which the Wall Street Journal characterizes as blocking popular opposition figures from running against him in July's presidential election.
Great.
Probably not good if he was doing that directly or to what extent he was. I know that The Wall Street Journal was publishing a lot of bullshit when we were doing, like, a coup against Maduro or whatever. You know, we were backing up the Guaido guy for a while. But, you know, if he was banning people, that's not very good, I guess.
Yeah, that's weird.
But anyway, their minister was saying, shove your opinions wherever you can fit them.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's really lovely.
And he was also directing some ire toward two normally friendly presidents, Gustavo Petro of Colombia and Brazil's Lula. who are both like left.
Kind of left because Madora's left, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So a little intra left fighting there.
We do love that.
A classic.
Yes.
Millay, the right wing guy for his part, has lashed out at leftist opponents in Argentina as, quote, useless parasites and, quote, human excrement.
Oh, yeah.
Human excrement.
Pieces of shit.
Wow. The inclusion of ignoramus has me thinking of those Cracker Barrel triangle peg games. Oh. So now I'm picturing, like, you get four, you're an ignoramus. You get three, you're a fascist. You get two, you're a piece of human excrement.
You get one, you're useless parasite. So this is a pretty shitty article in a lot of ways. Like, it says, Millay called the authoritarian leaders of Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela.
Okay.
The Wall Street Journal also gratuitously editorializes here by saying, in like a parenthetical, countries with no free or fair elections. Which Cuba probably has like six times as many elections as we do.
Right, like, they probably have way more involvement
but because,
in general.
Because their voter turnout is like 94% or something, like everyone in the Western world is going to say, oh, there's no way. Mm-hmm. Like, they're pumping up the numbers, so they can't be voting.
They can't possibly have like an actually interested citizenship.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, maybe they're showing to the polls because like their kids are at the poll, like, you know, being the little... Instead of really super old people, they have, like, the little Boy Scouts and stuff.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Just kind of, hey, here's the ballot box.
That's so cute.
You know?
That'd be a whole lot easier than having to look up a bunch of confusing numbers and figure out what precinct I'm in. And, I don't know. It changes, like, every time, too.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
Why do they keep... I know why, but...
Yeah. It's intentional.
I was reading some horror stories of, like, poll workers of, like, yeah, I have, like... 9 or 10 hour shifts or whatever, and there's only two of us working, and these are like old people. I'm like, I don't think old people are supposed to be like working that hard.
It's too much.
Well, and it's volunteer work too, right?
Totally. Yeah, I think you get paid insane. Like $1 or something stupid, but
you might get like per diem type of thing, but
to get lunch
it's
or something.
Nothing.
Right, it's not worth you. If you were a working person, it would not be worth it for sure. Anyway, what did so the Wall Street Journal was just adding their own jabs in. They didn't want to be left out. But Millay called these leaders of Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela truly despicable. Said they were Latin America's worst presidents.
Wow. Okay, that's kind of a high bar to set. I think y'all got some worse ones.
There's some stinkers.
It didn't make it clear. Like, it wasn't historical.
Does
it's ambiguous,
current, worst
right?
Current presidents?
At worst current, he adds in there, like, I know there were some assholes.
Listen, there were some bad guys in there.
Porfirio Diaz, piece of shit. Human excrement. He says, this is Millay still talking more shit. After them, there are other cases on the same path, like in Colombia with Mr. Petro. Just throwing shade randomly to other people. About this guy, Gustavo Petro, he's like a left kind of guy. Mm-hmm. He says, you can't expect much from someone who had been a murderous terrorist and communist.
Wow. Yeah.
It's a lot of words to stick together.
Yeah.
What a resume.
Yeah.
Which, to be honest, Petro was in, like, when in the time of their civil war, he was, like, in the, like, the communist guerrilla. Like, he was in the guerrilla army.
Some people, yeah.
I mean, you know, I guess you could, if you wanted to, string those words together to describe that.
Right.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be technically true, but, I mean, I'm sure there's lots of veterans who are in the presidency who have also killed people.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and even, I mean, to... Not to jump around to different historical examples, like to keep with their own. Once that civil war was over, they brought in like that guerrilla group and like legitimized them. They disarmed themselves and became part of the government, like as a political party. And, you know, it wasn't just him. It was like lots of people that were like, okay, yeah, we're not going to do the guerrilla warfare thing because there's a peace process now. And, you know, like
that's war. That was different times.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, it's people are talking in different areas of, you know, are they ever going to do any sort of peace process in Gaza and everything? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, if they were, it's not like it's completely unprecedented. Like, we've had lots of civil wars in South America and Central America where they've had situations like this where it's like, yeah, you know, you do end up bringing, right, the groups that you were before calling terrorists and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
You end up bringing them into the government and making them a legitimate political party, and that happens unless you're going to go and try to genocide everybody.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, anyway, he's a murderous, you know, terrorist, a communist.
Full resume, I'd hire him.
Gustavo Petro, he called Millay, he compared him to Hitler.
Oh, good.
What else?
Playing the hits.
Yeah, you know, just a good old Hitler comparison. Here you go. Fidel Castro famously called President Ronald Reagan, quote, a madman, an imbecile, and a bum.
Incredible. Wow.
Reagan the bum.
I love it so much.
I'm just imagining Reagan walking down the street with a bindle now and some shabby clothes. Yeah.
Can you spare a dime?
Yes.
I pictured it as his like new campaign slogan, like Reagan, madman, imbecile, bum.
That's great.
His opponent would run that, but in very small print, it's like
paid quote for by
Fidel Castro.
Oh yeah, they have to credit him. Yeah.
Oh my god. This was in response. He was clapping back.
Yeah. Oh, what was the?
Because Reagan included Cuba in a group of outlaw states that sponsored terrorism, describing the leaders of those nations as, quote, the strangest collection of misfits, Looney Tunes, and squalish criminals since the advent of the Third Reich.
Whoa. Like, God, again with the Hitler.
A hell of a guy to be, like, that guy calling the other guy, relating him to the Third Reich is...
That's rough.
Pretty incongruous.
I don't think you understand how things work.
Yeah.
Woof. I do have something. The Reagan thing reminded me. I watched a docuseries on Netflix called The Octopus Murders. Have you seen this?
I've heard this referenced.
I've listened to multiple podcasts who had the creators on.
Oh, okay.
And so I've been... It's on my list. I need to watch it.
It's really good.
Okay, cool. Okay,
can I like give spoilies or do we want to...
I mean, I've gotten a decent amount of spoilies from that. I mean, they said they weren't spoiling it. It sounds like a really complex story.
It's extremely complex.
There's a lot of characters and really interesting ones.
I don't mind.
Okay. Go for it. I don't mind. Yeah, go.
It won't be like an in-depth summary. Mm-hmm. It'll be kind of a shitty one, so you'll still get something from watching it, I'm sure. It's on Netflix. It's like 4 episodes. I think they're like an hour-ish long each. And it starts out with the murder of this journalist in the 90s, I think he gets murdered, or 80s? Gosh, I don't even know the time here. His name is Daniel Casolaro. Mm-hmm. He gets murdered in West Virginia in a motel out there. It's very suspicious from the start. He'd been investigating the Innslaw case, which I had never heard of, and I was like, the fuck is this? Mm-hmm. And it's this case where the DOJ had hired this computer group. It's like a computer software group that specializes in, I guess, legal stuff to make software for them because they were still using paper in the Department of Justice.
Oh, yes.
And this is like the 80s. And they're like, guys, we got to get computers in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they hire Innslaw, and Innslaw does the work for them. They make this software called Promise, without an E for some reason. Promise.
Promise.
And it's supposed to be like revolutionary. Like, holy shit, this is going to change the game. Okay, great. And then they refuse to pay them for it. And then they basically steal it. It benefits this other tech firm that has like tons of ties to like the Reagan administration, and like all these other like, you know, three-letter agencies out there, like, you know, CIA, FBI, etc. And Innslaw ends up going bankrupt. They're like, hey, what the fuck? You just like put us out of business by not paying for this expensive ass software. And so they take him to court, and it's really like shady. Like the judge, they find a judge that's like, yeah, that was fucked up. You owe them money. That is the only judge on that circuit to get replaced the next year.
Whoa.
And he is replaced by the guy who was arguing like the prosecutor, like on the other side.
Oh my God.
The defense. He was arguing on behalf of the DOJ. So like, the fuck? Okay, we get it, you know? So, Casolaro starts investigating this, and it ends up having, like, all these crazy ties to, there's an indigenous group called the Casadon Indians. Let me Google it, because I don't remember the name.
Speaking of, like, dramatized historical / documentaries, apparently, one of the creators, like, plays that character, right? Danny?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
They were talking
about, really well done.
They were talking about how they were so weirded out that just the way he was dressing normally, and he would like come up to, I think he met the dude who died's mom, yes. and she was like thought it was a prank.
Because
he
looked so much like him. Yeah. She was like, he looked exactly like him. It was really creepy.
Yeah. Yeah. So then, of course, he plays him in the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very well done. And it's great. Like, I think they do the job framing it within the story of, like, this parallel to how this Danny Casolaro, he gets really invested in the story and kind of goes crazy with it. And the guy in the documentary kind of going crazy with it. Like, he's dedicated, like, over 10 years of his life to this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, I have to go look up this Native American group. Cabazon.
Okay.
So what ends up happening is he tracks down this Innslaw business. He tracks down so that the other business that had like benefited from it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. He makes connections between, I don't know exactly the connections, and I'm not gonna get into it. He makes connections between that whole situation and this Indian reservation out in California, in Indio, California, and they are, sovereign land. And so this guy comes in here. This guy is so fucking shady. I was cracking up as they're describing his resume because he calls himself a social worker.
Mm-hmm.
And they do an interview with his son. And he's like, yeah, we moved around a lot. We started off in, like, Argentina. And he lists, like, every Latin American country.
Total fed.
And yeah, he says shit like, oh, he was, like, helping, like, the government or something. And I'm like, which one? they show a map of all the places he lived. And it was, like, fucking everywhere. And it was always super shady. And, like, this man pushed some people out of helicopters. Like, I'm just fucking here to tell you.
Yeah.
I don't remember the exact phrasing of it, but it was so fucking funny. And, like, the son was just so, like willfully stupid about it. Like, yeah, I think he was doing good stuff, you know?
Nice.
So they end up with this guy. His name is, like, Nichols. And he is on this land, and he is basically funneling weapons here. Like, he's developing weapons here to, like, be sold off, like, in the Contras.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so, wow. Like, this thing is crazy. It connects to that. It connects to, like, Reagan and his election. Like, there's just, that's why it's called Octopus, because there's so many different, like, layers to it and stuff like that. But it's really, really good. It's kind of crazy, and at the end, you know, it's very ambiguous, but, like, I really enjoyed it.
It's pretty impressive, like, how Reagan did so much evil and found so much time to, like, do more arms deals than, like, anybody, man.
He had a second job, and it was drug running as well.
Yeah,
it's drug crazy. Running and arms deals, because that's also involved in this, is narcotics.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's what got Gary Webb killed, was another journalist that got offed, probably, or shot himself in the head twice.
Mm. No, yeah, so right. This murder was 12 slits on the wrist in such a way that, like, the tendons were cut. You literally could not physically have lifted after a certain point.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Suicide.
So, but it was suicide. And they embalmed the body almost immediately before they fucking told the family.
Oh,
they had already embalmed the body. So that means doing an autopsy correctly is much harder.
Mm-hmm.
So, pretty fucking sus. And even told his brother, like, weeks, like 3 weeks before he got murdered, he said, if something happens to me, it's not an accident.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Yeah, I need to go watch that now.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It goes to some crazy places. They're like, oh, the October surprise thing from Reagan's election, the hostage situation, right? Like, in Iran, they're saying that he was able to negotiate them holding the hostages until he was elected.
It was literally, like, the day he took office that they let them go.
That's so fucked.
It's a slick campaign move.
The people he was, I mean, that's the Iran of Iran-Contra is they were, like, benefiting from those arms deals, so.
Oh my god.
Crazy.
It's crazy. There's, like, multiple murders involved in this thing. Like, you can go some fucking places. Yeah. If you want to get mad about Reagan, recommend.
Yeah, remember that the way to describe Reagan to someone in few terms is worst president, ruined everything.
Worst president, ruined everything.
Or you could call him a bum and the other two things. Yeah, yeah.
He's got a lot of taglines.
Yeah, yeah.
What else we got?
Yeah, what else is on the docket?
Danny, what do you got? You were talking about a movie.
Yeah, so when I first saw this, I was like, are they talking about Marvel movies? What? It's called Civil War.
That does sound like a Marvel movie.
I know, right? There's one. Yeah. I was immediately like, ugh. You know, but... yeah, it's A24. It's like star-studded cast. I think Kirsten Dunst is in it as a journalist. Mm-hmm. Just like really kind of cold demeanor journalist, because like it sounds like there's a lot of really disturbing imagery in this movie. Ooh. Like people strung up and people just like dying on the ground and stuff. Because it's like a war, you know, in the U.S. But directed by a British dude. I should have looked up his name, but yeah, I mean, some people's, it's not out yet. I think it comes out on the 12th. It's supposed to be like the U.S. government is controlled by a MAGA sort of descended thing. Nick Offerman plays the president, and he's on his third term.
Okay. Ooh. Wait, bringing that back.
Yeah.
Cool.
And they're just like drone bombing, like,
just cities?
The states, yeah, people that are against them. And whoa. California and Texas team up to be like the Western Alliance or something.
Why did they team up?
I know, I have no idea.
This was by a British person.
Yeah, I know.
Those were the only two states he knew, so.
Yeah.
I saw this tweet that was like, because apparently there's also a Florida Alliance that's like neutral, which is really
not
weird.
Not Florida would do.
But apparently it's like Florida and Georgia and maybe another state or two. And some guy was like, there is no way Georgia would ever ally with Florida. I guess this is what it's like when, to other people, when, like, Americans make movies about other countries.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's like...
you don't even know.
Yeah. I don't know. The article's just saying it's, like, it is kind of an interesting thing because it's, like, lays out in front of us, like, a very divisive but very poignant and contemporary, you know, divide.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, people from all walks of life and political understandings will pull different things from it, clearly, you know. And yeah, I think it follows two journalists. The other guy is from Narcos. I'm not sure who he plays, but yeah, no, I mean, it sounds really cool. I want to check it out. A24, I don't know, they usually do pretty good.
I think I've only seen Everything Everywhere All at Once from A24. I don't think I've seen another of their
movies.
Did
you see either... Are you a horror film person?
I can't, man.
Okay,
I'm a bad gay. I can't do that.
Well, Hereditary was like... one of the most mortifying movies I've ever seen in my life.
Heard.
And I saw it at Texas Theater, and it was on a huge screen, and I was like...
Ooh.
There's something about the camera tracking in that movie that just sets you on edge, because it's like you're looking around a room like kind of slowly.
Ooh.
You can't really tell, and then it's, of course, there's a million jump scares.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, by the end of the movie I was like so on edge because of that.
Ooh.
Pacing, it was crazy. But no, I mean, Lighthouse was good. I think Uncut Gems was A24 also. Mm-hmm. That was pretty good.
Okay, I don't think I've seen it. I'm bad at movies, honestly.
No, I mean, it's like, it's the new, like, ultimate produced movie style.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Which
I've
I don't
heard such
hate.
Good things.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I think it's better than the Marvel trend, you know?
They seem to do, like, really good production.
Yeah.
And, like, they seem very creative.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've heard
it's art house, but upscale.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Dumbass confession.
Okay.
I love to show my ass in this podcast. So I, for the longest time, thought A24 was a type of camera.
It sounds like one.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, what?
I mean, maybe, is it?
I still thought it was a reference to that.
Yeah, so. Maybe it's a reference to that.
Maybe.
I don't know. I'd be curious, etymology of the name, but yeah, we're looking it up.
It was founded. The name A24 was inspired by the Italian A24 motorway Katz was driving on when he decided to found the company.
Okay.
It's a road.
Okay, that is cool.
Interesting.
Oh, that movie sounds crazy. I don't know. I feel obviously weird about 2024 and upcoming, like, near future. I'm just like, I don't fucking know. So, I don't know, so many people are still, like, hand-wringing over it of, like, you know, like, someone will be like, oh, I'm gonna leave the country if Trump wins.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, I'm like, what year is it? Are we doing this again?
Right.
Like,
I remember that from 2016,
exactly.
You know, yeah.
Like, you are fine, you will probably still be fine. Like, it's just this idea of people having this idea of, it's going to get so much worse, and I'm like, it's already very bad.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I'm struggling with that kind of like thinking, you know, like even mm-hmm. Kyle was like, oh, should we take our pride flag down? Like, what if people go crazy? And I'm like, they're not gonna fucking do that in our neighborhood. There's a million pride flags out. Like, mm-hmm. we'll be fine.
That's, yeah. Looking at that Civil War film is like, they're not gonna be clean. Like, states are not gonna look, they're not gonna have the right borders. If we do a Civil War,
mm-hmm.
it's a big if. I think people are too apathetic to do a Civil War.
Yeah, like, I don't know that it'll happen. yeah.
If you were to have one mm-hmm. and really draw up the lines,
yeah.
states are gonna disintegrate into like
city states?
Yeah, city yeah. states with possibly mm-hmm. with defended corridors along like interstates.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So
more walls.
Yeah, you would essentially have like,
I'm going to the walled-in city, guys. That's where all the nice people are.
You'll uh-huh. have city-states. Uh-huh. This is a huge if. This could not happen. Yeah. But something catastrophic mm-hmm. catalyzes everyone into being like, fine, I will put down like the comforts of the Imperial Corps to do a civil war.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, okay? There's no way.
This is, half the world is socialist by this point,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we're barely able to exploit any more countries, and so everyone's so pissed off because they don't have the treats, and fine, they descended to civil war. Okay.
Yeah.
You have the city-states, the urbane, like, kind of, you know, they're not, you can't call them liberal anymore, because if we're descending into civil war, these guys are, like, essentially what you would have called a moderate Republican or mm-hmm. conservative yeah. from the 90s.
Yeah.
Those are your new, like, democratic law and order, mm-hmm. traditional bastion places.
They're the unionists.
Yeah, the unionists, the federals.
Yeah,
as they would have said for the Civil War, they have the cities, the blue mm-hmm. cities, and then they may, if they retain the army,
mm-hmm.
protect corridors connecting whichever cities are in their alliance. So this Texas, Florida bullshit or whatever, all that sounds stupid.
Well, this is a weird like reversal that I'm just realizing as you're saying that is that like, the more right side, like the right-leaning side, is the federal government in this scenario.
That's and true. Theirs, yeah.
Yeah. And I would assume that a more left-leaning side is the people against it, yeah. California and Texas, but I don't know what that looks like. Right. I don't know.
I don't understand it.
Maybe some parts of North Texas and Austin.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. There's no way that happens.
Unless they're treating California as conservative or something.
Which, yeah, I mean
there, a lot
it
of
is
it.
Conservative there in a lot of ways.
Everything
yeah.
but, like, the city. That's my yeah. question. Is there a red city? This is a dumb question.
Interesting thought.
Are there conservative general. Cities?
There are very few, but they uh-huh. do technically. I mean, you do have, like, Republican mayors of some places. Not very big cities.
But. I was going to say, but, like, major metropolitan areas. I'm talking, like, you have a big airport. Do you have red ones of those?
Interesting.
Well, as recently, I mean, Bloomberg wasn't a Republican. He ran as a Republican, but he mm-hmm. was independent in New York.
I guess New York can sometimes go either way.
Yeah, because basically, every once in a while, you get people pissed off enough, and they
mm-hmm.
And they are way more democratic now than they used to be. They used to be mm-hmm. a little bit more
I agree.
Flowy.
Yeah.
I think that was true of a lot of places, most though. Places. Like, most cities. Like, I think Dallas used to have, like, Republican mayors all the time, and then we stopped.
So that's I agree. Mm-hmm. That's a weird flow. I mean, California could get Republican really easily, provided that
like
the first
Northern California,
yeah,
they don't give a shit.
Well, I mean, Reagan was the governor of California, right? You know,
the OG.
Yeah.
All you have to do is open up the Civil War with a couple of nukes, and California is Republican.
There you go.
But it's silly. I mean, you would have. I mean, it's pretty easy. Just draw the Civil War lines.
Yeah. They're not along state lines necessarily, right?
No, because West Virginia famously was like, we're West Virginia now. We don't want to be in the Confederacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Slaves? What slaves? Mm-hmm. We don't want
we're
those. Poor. You guys hate us. We're not in your state.
I love it. Yeah. I love it.
They seceded from the seceded Virginia. We're seceding into the United States.
Yeah, okay.
Fuck this. We're gone.
Like, interesting.
Which is a badass move.
It's very badass.
But then on the flip side of that, I mean, they were like bluer than blue.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Like up through the 2000s.
Oh, yeah, because they were like coal country, and they like had unions.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Had huge union presence there. basically militantly democratic stronghold.
That's so cool. I wish.
And then, you know, I mean, eventually the Democratic Party, you know, repeatedly demonstrated to them they didn't give a fuck about unions. Yeah. And so they're like, fine. You know, but, and now there you can't find a more Republican state, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But,
that's bizarre.
So weird.
It's like one of the parties wants to lose.
Oh, weird.
Which one? Oh my gosh. Ugh. Yeah, speaking of electoralism, I did come across something interesting. I guess in Wisconsin, there's like this movement to get people to vote uninstructed.
Mm. I've heard of this. I've heard that for Biden. Oregon, too.
Yeah, I guess. Like, because, you know, again, because Biden's stance on Palestine or whatever is what the headline said, but...
There's, I think in Washington, it's uncommitted, maybe? Or,
in Minnesota,
yeah. Leave it blank is there is another one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, I don't know. I think in Wisconsin, it was saying, I don't really understand, but if enough people say, if enough people write uninstructed, then they work it out in a different process.
Yeah.
Kind of like caucuses, it sounded like, but it was a different word. I don't know.
Yeah, I've heard of other states like having similar campaigns, like in Washington, Oregon, I think. Mm-hmm. Which, like... I think that's fine if you want to, like, send a message, but, like, I think it's also, like, it's not going to do anything.
Yeah, what is it going to do that's different? Are you going to, for your state, secure a different Democratic nominee?
Yeah,
like, what? That's going to go away so fast. I don't know. Maybe it's symbolic. I have no idea, but...
It has a potential. I wouldn't... Mm-hmm. I'm not going to completely shit on it.
Yeah.
In itself, it's not very useful. It's like... Okay, cool. Yeah, yeah. Middle finger.
Yeah.
But as part of a broader, like, awareness / recruitment to a bigger movement, which is where everyone falls apart. I mean, no one, you know, everybody mobilized and everything for Obama, and then they just immediately said, we're not doing anything with this. Like, this is going away. Don't they put any pressure on him.
Yeah.
They had a mass of people out there. I was a 16-year-old working phone banks. That's how interested I was in Obama at the time. But, like, we didn't do anything afterwards. Right. Yeah. We didn't, like,
they were just like,
take it.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. Anyway, we're going to go do some bureaucracy.
Yeah. The good guys are in charge now. You don't have anything to worry about.
Pat you on the head. Move on.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a bit like giving a very good sermon on Sunday. And then everyone goes out and does all the sinning and comes back next Sunday.
So, yeah.
Well... Here I am.
Yeah.
Inspire me again. You know?
Instead of Sunday, it's election day.
Yeah. Or Sunday, like, here's what you should do. Now let us go out and do that.
Yeah.
You know, motivated by this thing and, like, actually driving us to take real action.
Well, shit, we do the same thing here, huh?
Well, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're relying on you guys to do the real good action for
Please
us.
Please do good action for us.
Yeah, it's odd thinking of, like, I voted for Obama when I was 18. I guess that was his second term. We talk about fake news now, or I guess we did in 2016. I don't know if anyone says that word anymore, but I think it was still just as unclear then. Because anytime I heard anything that was, like, against him, I was, like, convinced that he was good, you know, and doing good things.
Yeah.
And so I would just think... Oh, that's just someone trying to smear him, you know, and they are not looking at the same stuff I am, so they're probably wrong, you know, and it's like, that's the same thing, you know, and I don't know, just, I listened to a pod that was like talking about, you know, it's just, they just each do a little vignette on a president and all of the horrors they've committed, and one of them had Obama, and it was like... Yeah, I mean, he really upped the drone bombings and stuff like that, just of civilians and stuff, and because of course, I mean, that's what happens when you do that. But
at least he agonized over each one personally.
I know. I'm sure he's. That's why he has a bunch of gray hair now. You know.
At least he went gray from it. Yeah, all worth it.
Yeah, I guess we got to drone strike him.
Yeah.
No choice. I think that was the experience I had. In 2020, when seeing people weirdly celebrate Biden and try to, like, you know, there are those accounts that are like, here's what he did, and, like, listing the paltry fucking accomplishments. Ugh, and it's never like, hey,
so depressing.
Somebody needs X, so I give them X. It's always like, well, somebody has to apply for a tax credit and then do this and then jump through this ring of fire. I think my conversion to communism away from liberalism was just... very much seeing all of the ridiculous hoops they put people through. It's like, the best you can hope for is a fucking tax credit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you serious? Mm-hmm. You're not just going to give people what they need. You're going to, like, make them do more work to earn what they already, like, desperately, desperately need and don't have time for. It's insane.
I think there's a new child tax credit bill, speaking of that.
Oh, yeah?
That's, like, going to the Senate right now.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
supposed to be... One of the best
yeah,
poverty fighting maneuvers that
yeah.
our government can put together.
Yeah.
So
I mean, don't get me wrong, like those are good to have, mm-hmm. but yeah. like it just bothers me that it's never like, hey, we got you college. It's like, hey, mm-hmm. we're gonna give you a $5,000 loan if you meet this level of poverty yeah, and yeah. in this situation.
The problem I think is that's not so that would be to me the thing that in the like final episode of whatever season of The West Wing, they would come together with the Republicans and figure and that make out. That.
So yeah. this is the moment where West Wing broke me. There is this part in West Wing where they're on the road for the campaign and they get to this bar and it's like at the end of the episode and Toby Ziegler sits down with this guy and he just, like, starts up a conversation with him, and it is insane. This man's like, oh, yeah, I've got a daughter. I work touring colleges and blah, blah, blah. Because they've been talking about education this whole time or whatever. Uh-huh. And this man, this regular, like, Ohio-ass man just goes, you know, it's really expensive, but, you know, I think we can make it work. And he goes, you know, it's hard, but I think it should be hard. But I think it should just be a little bit easier. And I'm like, who thinks like that? Who's like, yes, I want to work extremely hard and go into massive debt for education. But right. that's fine. Like, yeah. what a fucking Puritan nasty man.
Bootstraps, man.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was just Sorkin.
That was, yeah, no, it was absolutely like, this is just what he wanted someone to say.
Yeah, Sorkin was just evoking his own inner, like, masochist.
Okay.
Whip me daddy America sort
yes.
of thing.
Yeah.
The Democratic Party, at least for a time of its history, was forced into social democratic positions.
Yeah. That's just not happening anymore.
Yeah. And to the extent to which we can build a formidable socialist and communist movement in this country is the extent to which, or we did this for a while, have a rival out there that presents a socialist communist alternative. Yeah, I mean, if we can do either of those two things, we can pressure them into social democratic reforms. If we can't do that, we end up with the world we're looking at right now, the Democratic Party we're looking at right now, which is just like pratfalling, whatever the opponents to the Harlem Globetrotters were. like the Washington...
Commander? Generals, not commanders, generals. It's something like kind of military, which is very funny to me.
Yeah, with those guys, like, they just go out there and just, you know, fall down.
It's on purpose, professional
like,
losers.
We get that. And we get, like, they're coming out of the gate with the whatever they got from the Heritage Foundation as their, literally, like, the Obamacare plan, you know, as their opening gambit. Like, I mean, that's what we're going to have. Absent any sort of fear on their part in the real sense and like the political sense, you know, for the more squeamish of us. But like, if they don't have that, if they don't think part of the country is going to raise up against us if we don't do something, or we're going to, you know, have mass strike action. Or
they need the fear in them.
They need the fear. They need that fucking, oh, there's Hoover camps full of millions of pissed off homeless people. I need to do something.
Yeah, we have literal... You know, armies of veterans demanding pay bonuses and stuff and marching on the Capitol, like real mass working class action has to do it. And that's, again, not, we're not, I don't know, I'm trying to be a good communist here also. Like, that's not enough. That doesn't, that is enough to, like, get us some concessions.
That's the thing, is I don't think but, they're even playing that game anymore.
Right, yeah.
I would, their concession is, we'll, like, put a flag up sometimes for your particular identity group.
Yeah.
You know, like
we'll put the flag on some drones.
Yeah. Yeah. And even then we're not always going to do it. Like they're doing that. I think they're taking down flags for embassies again or something. Like that was their compromise.
What flags?
Their pride flags. Sorry.
Oh, wow.
No more pride at embassies.
No, you can't be gay in an embassy anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. But that, apparently that was their compromise for this really, really big bill. And like the other, but of course, someone explained, like, oh, but the other things on there were much worse, and this was way better. And it's like, okay, but it's still stupid, right? Like, sure, I'll take it. I guess if it's between this and fucking, like, no more trans healthcare ever. Sure, I guess I'll take putting the flag down, but still.
I don't know. I remember people telling me, and by people I mean Mr. White, as a colleague of mine at that time, telling me, like, Obama's just doing these small bore things, and he's giving away all this stuff to the health mm-hmm. insurance companies, and this isn't enough, and this is, you know, wimpy what they're doing. And mm-hmm. at the time, I was just a liberal, you yeah. know, mm-hmm. and so I was like, well, I don't know. It's a lot better than what the Republicans yeah. are saying. Yeah. This is a responsible, you know, something that can actually happen and these sorts of things. And mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. It's interesting to come to it later in life and then be like, damn, they were right the whole time. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's tempting to have that mindset because I think this is like the liberal ideology of like, look how smart and unemotional I am. You know, I've got statistics and I'm willing to compromise. Like, I think people are so scared of being seen as like utopian and hopeful. It's seen as ridiculous to ask for what you want, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I've been told all my life in conjunction with like voting.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like, no, you got to make like a strategic vote.
Yeah.
You can't just vote for who you want. Like, it's like, that was so confusing to me at first, you know? And I think rightly so.
Yeah. Because you do kind of step back and like, wait, no one is voting for who they want?
Yeah.
Why are we doing this?
Like, imagine if like your fucking therapist told you about that, like for like dating something. Like, you just got to compromise and settle down. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's so shitty.
Well, I feel like people for years would say that
people
about
would say
relationships.
That.
Yeah. I mean, you know, arranged marriages, mm-hmm. Whatever.
It was very much of a security first. If
yeah.
you happen to like them, great. They don't mm-hmm. beat you, fantastic.
Yeah.
You know?
You got a keeper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, wow, cool. Ugh. It's,
yikes.
I don't know, like, this is very doomer, sorry.
We're on that train, it's okay.
Okay, great. So I've been reading our books for next week's episode, so I'm not going to get too far into explaining anything. But they are very, like, meditative and describe a better world, but also, like, a kind of a complex world. And so it just, does anyone, show of hands in the class, does anyone feel like it's going to get better? Because right now, we would probably all say no. But I mean, like, general population, do you feel like if you go out there and just, like, see people out and about and you ask them, like, do you think it's going to get better or worse?
I think I know people who say it will get better. My mom thinks
yeah.
it will get better.
Yeah.
But she is also, like, unwilling to focus on any horrifying things that are going on. And, you know, to her credit, she probably lives a much happier life that way.
Yeah.
I'm
jealous of that sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I get it, you know? It's like, she's like, I go insane if I focus on that stuff. Mm-hmm. I just have to focus on what's in front of me. When do you realize, like, after not focusing on something for so long that it is in front of you then?
That's the
and
question.
It's like, I don't know. I don't know if anyone can make any difference, especially just thinking about it or talking about it. Maybe it makes a difference,
hey,
but a small difference maybe. But I guess I have taken on the tact of focusing on things more, even if they make me depressed, and like getting a hardened exterior
yeah.
from that, or interior maybe, I don't know. And I don't know if that's recommendable to anybody. No, I mean, I'd say the more optimistic side of me wants to think that things trend in a leftward direction.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know if that's true, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
There's some really bad shit happening too.
I mean, I personally am like, very worried, you know?
Yeah,
generally
yeah,
worried. It's this weird situation where, like, I personally am comfortable. Like, I talk about this on the show all the mm-hmm. fucking time. I feel fine. Probably my kids will be fine. After that, I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
You know? And I think what you said about, like, when is it going to be a priority?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
And I think more and more people are fucking struggling, you know? Like, it's really normal to have multiple jobs. It's really normal to have tons of debt. Many, many people have just written off the idea of, like, buying a house or having kids ever. Like, we're seeing our birth rate go down, which, like, whatever. I'm fucking, you know. On the one hand, it's, like, fucking cool. That's
yeah.
fine. But also, like, people are like, oh, but it's economically, like, a bad sign. I don't fucking know. It just doesn't feel great. That's for fucking sure.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I don't know. I've of two minds of this. One is history can happen fast.
Yeah.
So you can be chilling one day in a democratic country and boom, you know,
yeah.
the fascists kick the door in.
Yeah.
whether from another country or your own.
Yeah.
whoever they're funded by.
Nine times out of ten, that's
bad
us.
Bad news is we're usually the fascists.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, I think that's something to keep in mind, because, like you said, sometimes we get kind of comfortable of, like, I'm probably going to be okay, you know, people I know, and historically, there's a lot of people who thought that before.
I feel like they may get, they may have to get worse before they get better. You know
I think
saying?
So. I think there's not enough people who are pissed and are doing something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be, and that is the orthodox historical materialist way to look at it, is, you know, you break down your marks and your angles and you lay that out and say, okay, we will do Lenin's imperialism. Well, your far-flung areas, we see this all the time, and we're immune to it so much so that certain parts of the world, oh yeah, there was a landslide, killed 300 people. That's what happens there, right? And it's very racialized and everything, but that's like normal because that's the periphery, right? And that part of the world, things are going to get worse so much so that eventually parts of it are going to break off and start building the alternative. And eventually that alternative is going to crumble inward towards us. All the while, things will be getting materially worse for us.
Because we won't have them to lean on and exploit.
And only by the time you get to that point will things get so bad for us that we're going to be talking about the actual crisis things we're hinting at here of like, things are probably going to break apart.
We got fucking bridges falling down. You know, like we can't. We can't maintain our shit. We can't be a place to live, increasingly.
If it helps you, gives you any comfort whenever you're driving around, there's some sort of national board or whatever that says that only like 51% of our bridges in the nation are what's considered structurally deficient.
Great. Only 51%.
You toss a coin the next time you go driving, that
there's
should be
so
fine.
So many overpasses in DFW.
That's funny.
We have like the biggest ones. Like people marvel at them, and I'm like, well, that's just like an overpass.
Yeah, I'm like 635. You're showing me
The big five over there. High five.
The high five.
75 and 635. Is that where it is?
That's
like the biggest one, I think, or something.
Probably.
I'm just like, I've driven this.
Yeah,
I know. But yeah, I always like laugh a little when I'm in the car with someone and they freak out when we're going on one of those one lane overpasses because it just feels crazy. And I used to when I was younger, but I kind of, you know,
you get so used to it.
I think it's cool still. Like,
same.
I'm always like,
oh. But you know, they're afraid of us, you know, crashing off the side or it collapsing. And you know, if 51% of bridges are like that, maybe I shouldn't be so comfortable with it anymore. I don't know. It makes you think.
For real.
I guess we were discussing basically the crumbling of empire. And what I was trying to marry together there is that it's a slow overall process with it's punctuated by crises.
So,
you know, you have the slow fall of the Roman Empire. People show up to fix the aqueducts less frequently. People show up to collect taxes less frequently, and more often you have
fucking paid mine is way too much.
The problem is more oftentimes you have just essentially mafioso come up to collect the taxes instead.
Ooh, nice.
Which then you get in the argument of like, what's the difference?
Which one's worse? Which one is sending fucking bombs to Gaza right now?
Bombs to Gaza. We would never do that.
Great.
That's something I always think about when I'm watching Sopranos. You know, I used to think, maybe when I started the series, I thought, what they're doing is counterculture, and it's against the government and against the laws, so maybe that's based. They're getting their shit, you know. But then, when I keep watching it, it's like, oh, this is the same thing, it's just not legitimized. They're doing capitalist shit. You know, they're growing their business, and they're collecting taxes, and running off people that, you know, get in the way of it.
A really good point. That is basically just government.
It's so weird.
It has a system.
Big turf. Exactly. Yeah.
They hit us. We got to hit them back.
Is
the proportional response?
Yeah.
It descends from fucking, like, mafia stuff descends from, like, obviously Italy, but, like, they had a version of that. Was that, like, from government? Like, where did that start up?
It was essentially, like, a local kind of form of strongman government of someone who is able to kind of organize the people there in terms of like run. Well, that's why they call it organized crime. Mm-hmm. Running, like saying you can do these sorts of crimes, run it through this sort of organization. Mm-hmm. But in exchange, you are going to be protected against these other people. Sorts of things. So that is the origins of taxes. Of you will pay taxes to your feudal lord, whatever.
And fucking keep.
And you get to come in and get protected when the barbarians from somewhere else come and attack you.
Is mobster shit just a holdover from feudalism?
Are they
feudal lords?
I mean, basically, it seems like they are.
Yeah, because you didn't have that in like Pax Romana, strong Roman Empire.
Very similar, like marriage relations for sure. Mm. Of like, yeah, you got a lady on the side, etc.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're guma. Yeah.
Such a silly word.
I know. I love it. Uh-huh.
One of my pet theories is government as evolved mafia.
I mean, it is.
I like it. Yeah. No, that's for sure.
That's how fucking kings did it. They were just like fucking roughing people up.
Yeah. Except they were like, no, actually, I didn't take this power myself. I was bestowed it by God.
God told me to fucking this guy's ass.
So it's just like, it's AJ Soprano running this. Like, I didn't even do this. It was my dad.
Yeah, I guess that's a pretty fitting.
Kings are just little shithead AJs.
Oh my God.
He was the worst.
I know.
What is funny though, like, I don't know, speaking to the show, like, in its strange subversion moments, is like, when the times when you're supposed to think, it tries to play it in this way where it's like, you're supposed to think of AJ as being a little dumb shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? He's being annoying.
Yeah.
He's just going through a stupid teenager phase. But at those times, he's usually saying something that when you step back and you're not seeing AJ say it, he's like, no, that's probably more correct than Tony's way of saying things.
Yeah.
It's like, life is actually like, you know, there is no God. Like,
oh, yeah. He gets really nihilist for a bit. That's so funny.
You're actually probably correct. Right now, I think you're a little shit.
Your delivery is off.
Well, and then he's like, I want to join the military and fly helicopters. Yeah. I'm like, what?
This is so weird. Plus, he goes to military school, right?
I can't remember. I binged that end part so fast.
I didn't finish the end.
I only ever did the end once.
The final season is...
You only did the end once. Okay. Yeah. But you've done some partial rewatches.
Yeah,
okay.
I've done many partial rewatches. I've only actually hauled through, I think it was like the last two seasons. I've only experienced those ones.
Yeah.
They're harder to,
to do.
Everything's falling apart. His life's falling apart. Like, some of the classic relationships are like going away. I'm like, damn. And the last episode is famously ambiguous, you know. So that's even more of a letdown in some ways.
You're like, I'm not even going to get rewarded for watching this. So.
Exactly. I immediately watched like a Sopranos Ending Explained video afterward. And I was like, oh, this is what I needed. Yeah, some comfort.
I need some closure.
Yeah.
I knew what was coming and it was still like,
Because you're so sketched out the whole time. You think something's going to happen. And maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't.
That's the same feeling, I guess, we're having coming up to this point in the imperial decline. Something's happening.
Yeah.
I don't know what. Doesn't feel good.
And our lights might go out before we see what it is.
Yeah. Very true. We're heavy on the media criticism.
We are. I like it.
Okay. Is this good? Is this,
yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about A24. We talked about Sopranos.
Musicals for some reason.
No, that's good. That's good.
Okay, so that was our big existential. Is it better? Is it worse? Uh-huh. Or will it get better? Will it get worse? Who fucking knows?
Yeah, who knows? Who is it that said? Is it Ingalls or something? Or who's just like really dogging on people who imagine a utopia and don't like do it literally? You know?
Was it?
I don't even know.
Was it Ingalls?
Maybe it was Mao.
It sounds like Engels, because scientific and utopian.
Engels hates utopia.
He does fucking hate utopian shit.
But I don't know, personally, like, how are you gonna get to something that's cool if you don't imagine it first? Like, sorry, but like, someone has to think about it. Like, what would the ideal thing be? Like, you're not just gonna stumble. Maybe you'll stumble into it, but like, then you get there and you're like, isn't as cool as I thought it was going to be, or what was I thinking? Nothing, because I'm not a utopian, because someone told me not to be.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think a better way of expressing what Marx and Engels are talking about with, like, don't be utopian.
Yeah.
Is don't put all your energy into being utopian.
I think that's fair.
I feel that, definitely.
But, like, I think it's important to carve out a little space in your heart for it, though.
Yeah.
Because, like, I feel like that keeps hope alive.
Yeah.
That keeps something to look forward to on, like, a grander human scale, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. But the problem they were facing... Yeah.
Was that everyone was off like, I'm going to go make Utopia Land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got some wagons and some weirdos. We're going to go make it happen.
Right. And yeah. So they're criticizing a lot of their previous movements of the Fourier's and what was the guy?
The Time Guy.
The Time Guy.
Morgan, I want to say.
Robert Owen? There was another guy, Robert Owen,
Robert
I think.
Robert Owen was a...
But they would plan
out... with Morris.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They would plan out every little detail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, we're going to build the building with these dimensions. It's like Noah's Ark.
Yeah.
It's like all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, that's fine, but that's energy you could have done to something else.
Well, like you see this today. You see kind of like living commune situations. Mm. And they turn into cults real fast.
Oh, yeah. That's scary.
I think that's so fascinating, though, that like I think without... like a grounding theory and a larger outside movement.
Yeah.
I think that's an ingredient for a cult. Mm-hmm. If you don't have, if your whole vibe is like, no, we just help each other. We don't do money, whatever. We're just trading, whatever it is. unless you have outside forces like interacting with you somehow, I feel like that's going to be a problem.
I mean, just thinking about creating a commune in this system, it's like, someone has to own the land.
Legally.
If the stuff around you doesn't change, you know, and who's going to own the land? Probably someone who lives there. Well, if there's no money on the commune, it obviously puts one person at an advantage because they can take their ball and go.
Exactly.
If they want, or control people with, you know, their, I don't know.
And you also run into the problem of your goal there. Like,
yeah.
If you are completely closed off like that.
Then what?
Yeah, so you turn to a communism of consumption.
Yeah.
But, like, there's no goal of taking down or liberating people
from... It's just for you and your friends and your family.
Yeah, and so then your goal becomes, like, how purely can we do this? Like, how can we do this the right way? How can we make sure we're, you know... Essentially, it becomes a morality project of, you know, policing people or whatever. Versus trying to... go struggle against the big evil sort of thing.
Yeah.
Really, then you're just seeing how good you can be within that system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
While ignoring the rest of everything else that's going on.
Isn't that democratic socialism?
I mean, yeah, basically. Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
On a larger scale. Like, fucking Norway's like, look how good we are.
We got our treats.
Where our money comes from.
Yeah, yeah.
How did we pay for this?
Yeah.
Don't even. Here's that healthcare.
I liked your
do
point
a little
on
utopian.
That. Yeah, do a little utopian imagining.
Yeah,
because it's probably important.
It's healthy.
Yeah, but it's
the main Marx and Engels point comes out to be, don't put all your effort in it, right?
Yeah.
But like their argument was the reason why you don't do that is because when you get to the revolution, you're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
But I think I would add that you're better grasping at some straws and being able to like say, well, this guy said this, this guy said this, this guy said this. They had these utopian ideas. Here's why these different things didn't work. Mm-hmm. You have more to work with if someone's done a little utopianizing.
Yeah.
You don't want that to be what you waste all your effort on, but you do want people thinking about the problem so that you have some place to start, I think.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's really hard to go up to a crowd of people and be like, hey, I'm going to take down the system. And they're going to be like, and then what? And you're like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The revolutionaries will figure it out.
Yeah.
And it's like, we'll figure it out. Isn't that us? Aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, good luck, bro.
Get to it, man. We got a lot of work to do. Got to rebuild society.
Yeah. That's fair. You got to give them, people something.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about the Vanguard thing, you know, because it does seem a little bit authoritarian, you know.
Ooh.
Just
you
know,
more anarchist.
Maybe. I mean, I feel like I'm an anarcho-communist in some ways. As a utopian myself, I like to pull things from my favorite pieces of all the things I've heard about. You know, mash them together in my head. Although maybe they don't go together. I don't know. You know, every time I think about a group of people deciding that. You know, even if it's a way I agree with, deciding this is the way we're going to do it, and we're going to go around and, like, educate people, and then we're going to lead, you know, a bloody revolution. As much as, you know, maybe the ends of that end up being like better in some ways. Like, there's a lot of people whose, you know, opinions get stomped on in the meantime. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe their opinions suck. I don't know. Does that mean they have to die? Does that mean they have to, you know, not be heard at all?
Yeah.
But, you know, and then it's like, well, incrementalism, how much progress do we do at a time to make sure everyone's happy? You know, that's something that always kind of floats around my head. It's like, I don't know if there is, like, a humane way to do that in that sort of way. You know, it, like you said, it has to be convincing. It's got to be inspirational, which is why I think utopianism, just a little, you know,
yeah,
to get the people's minds going.
Because, I mean, I think you can easily fall into the other side of things, saying, yeah, okay, I don't get to imagine the future. Then you can get hyper-focused and only do, like, electoralism, and only do,
yeah,
like, harm management, that, yeah, kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get into just social democracy.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can just say, we're just going to elect candidates. We're not going to worry about trying to organize people for the big takeover.
Yeah.
Because we're trying to get what we can. I like the points you raise about people not being heard.
Yeah.
And stuff, or like people having the, all, you know, different ideas of like, well, what are you going to do with them? I think the best answer, like, from that Marxist-Leninist point of view, I think, and Maoist stuff would agree, is democratic centralism.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, and the tricky thing with that is, like, actually doing it.
Yeah.
Sometimes people are heavy on the centralism and less on the democratic,
yeah,
and
yeah,
people don't get hurt at all.
It feels like the trend with that is, okay, shut the fuck up, we're busy fighting right now, you know, we don't have time to argue about this,
yeah,
let's go fight. And then after the fight, the trick is, then you have to bring them back in and say, okay, now, yeah, let's talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there's always, you know, there can always be more excuses as to, like, no, we still need to be centralized.
Yeah.
Right, because then you're, historically at least, you're dealing with all the other asshole countries that want to ruin you. And
maybe internal dissent or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, like, Mass Lion is the tonic to that in some ways, you know? Like, I think about the Black Panthers doing, like, free breakfast,
yeah,
and stuff like that. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you can have the ability to show people that it's, like, actually good materially,
yes,
you know?
Well, to show people and to bring them in, I think,
yeah,
that's, like, the key part of the Mass Line is that it's not really elaborated on that much, but it's got to play a role in there. Is not only are you doing the focus group sort of thing of, like, having that feedback, but you're also, in that process, I think, kind of organically building your party base and, like, recruiting people.
Yeah.
Like, every time you're going to people and stuff, like, you're kind of repping, like, well, hey, this is what we do. Like,
yeah,
this is good stuff, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, the guys that always come in and say, like, what do you need? And then, you know, a while later they show up. I'm like, we're doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're going to want to, like, join them.
Yeah. Know? I actually don't know those guys, but I'd love to meet them.
I would love to meet some of those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think that would counter some of the possibilities, you know, the negative tendencies of, like you're saying, being too central, centralizing, or too bureaucratic, or, you know, what have you. And historical conditions are going to be way different. If we ever pull something off like this in the United States, it's like the end of the road. We're going to be the last guys doing it.
Yeah, probably. It's got to be, yeah.
So we're not going to have to develop this in like a clandestine. I mean, there's going to be like secret police after us and shit.
Yeah.
But they're going to be on their last legs.
Like,
yeah.
By the time it gets around to us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not going to be like the Bolsheviks hiding in their book clubs and everything. That's going to be for most of the world, but maybe probably not for us. Because
I'm going to ask a personal question.
Okay.
Okay. So I am married to a non-communist.
As am I.
Okay, so this is what I want to talk about. Hopefully you're okay with that. So, like, he's on board as a theory. He's like, he describes it as, it's like a fantasy. He's like, it's just, it's unrealistic, blah, blah, blah. Like, he just doesn't think it can happen.
Sure.
But he likes it in ideas. Like, yeah, that'd be fucking great, but we're not, like, we're not there, we're not going to get there, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Well, has anyone reached true communism
exactly,
as it's been theorized?
Like, Sure.
In that sense, it kind of is a fantasy, but I'm willing to believe in it, you know?
Exactly. Like, I don't know, a lot of people believe in, like, God, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let me have my fantasy, you know?
That's a good get. Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't. You know?
Well, it's very much the same way that, you know, the kingdom of God is this utopia, not in the sense of, like, impossibility, but I guess in a way, sort of, but it's in the sense of something to work on Earth toward. And that's the same with communism. It's sort of an impossibility, but it's something we're trying to work towards. So yeah, you haven't had a communist society, but you have had communist parties that work like toward that.
They want it. Yeah, and that's I think that's
even
a good start.
Even just getting on the same page is huge.
Yeah.
Like, to me, the idea of having that hope and working towards it in the long term is important, and so I'm still willing to call myself a communist. I'm not willing to say, like, no, actually,
I'm just a socialist.
I'm too realistic. I'm just a socialist.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with being a socialist.
No, I mean, be a socialist to get to communism.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do. But, okay, but, like, does Abby feel similarly?
Abby doesn't support communism. She doesn't think it's correct, I guess.
Yeah.
It's good.
Like, morally?
Yeah, you know, I mean, she kind of is more negative on human nature in terms of, like...
I think Kyle's a little like that, too.
Yeah, so in a similar vein, criticisms of it wouldn't work, or, oh, people would abuse the power.
Yeah.
Or things like this.
Yeah. Okay, now, Kenny, would you date a non-communist?
Oh, here we go.
I guess that's a yeah, because I don't know if I've dated a communist before, honestly.
Probably a hard filter to find on the apps.
Yeah, no. I mean, the closest I can get, I guess, is apolitical or liberal on Bumble, which is horrible.
Ooh, that could be rough.
I'm like, if I don't put liberal, then everyone's gonna think I'm like a sketchy guy.
You know?
And if I put apolitical, then they think I'm even more sketchy. Sketchier. Yeah. And I'm like, what?
Can I just put
Yeah, I guess I could write it in my bio.
Like, track girls or something? Like, yeah. I don't know either.
When I see apolitical on a dating app, I'm like,
what do you think? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that they are deluding themselves.
Ooh.
I think anyone who
claims not to be political.
Yeah, who has the blinders up clearly has opinions. Mm-hmm. They're not willing to engage with it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, for a lot of people, that's like what allows them to live their life.
Truly.
Because, you know, it's too chaotic.
Or they think they have it figured out, like, oh, it's all rigged, man.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's all a game.
Right? It all works like this, and so I don't need to pay attention to it. And also, I'm the only person who's ever thought of this, and so I solved it. Well, we don't gotta think about it anymore.
It reminds me of this tweet I saw of, like, a guy with, like, a mullet and shit, and it was like, whenever you meet one of these guys, they're either, like, a raging libertarian or, like, the most based communist you've ever met. And that's how I feel about apolitical. It's like, are you meaning you opt out of the system because you know it's fucked?
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you on my level?
Yeah.
Or are you just like, it doesn't affect me because I'm extremely privileged, blah, blah, blah.
All right, level two question.
Okay.
Ooh.
Would you date an anti-communist?
No.
I could fix her, is what I have to say about that. Yeah.
Listen, Kyle started out as a libertarian.
There you go.
I made a lot of strides.
You had those thoughts.
That was our first fight. He bought me a Jimmy John's sandwich and a bouquet of flowers.
Aww.
So I trained him hard.
Oh,
I guess Abby was more right leaning when we first dated. But I was more right.
Yeah.
Too, because, I mean, I was just a little liberal.
I know.
Just a little Obama.
Yeah.
Obama boy.
Well, Obama voter.
This is the thing in my head that I keep on running up against is, and this is deluded to think this, but I think that most people would be communists if they had been presented to them in the way it's been presented to me.
Yeah.
You know, like, if they've had the similar experiences that I've had and listened to the hours and hours of podcasts that I have, which is not an advisable thing to do. It probably made me insane, but...
it's cool.
This podcast does not make you insane.
Yeah.
Please keep listening.
Yeah. But I don't know. I just, like, when I hear people talk about being a liberal or when they talk about issues, that's when it really gives it away for me, because it's like...
People want to do the right thing.
Yeah, that's the thing that really struck me, is that anyone... I don't know, this probably exists, but I don't know if anyone is in their head as, like, I'm the villain, I'm going to do the wrong thing. You know? Like every villain is convinced they're right, you know, and it's just the other people labeling them the villain, you know, or the bum or whatever. But,
imbecile.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I don't know. This is an exercise I would try to do with my dad because he's very right-leaning, more than right falling over, you know. Like, when I really try to get to the nitty-gritty and try to not use the buzzwords that trigger everyone, like, and we actually talk about what we want, usually the difference is our theory on how to get there.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And
I totally agree.
Yeah, and that's always, like, really heartening to me, but also, like, then I just think about what my mom says, where she's like, yeah, that doesn't have anything to do with me. And I'm like, damn, that's a way easier way to just let it roll off your shoulders and not have, like, an intense fight with someone about something that isn't tangible in front of you. And sometimes I go, what am I putting myself through this for?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You definitely have to pick your battles.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's really hard with family because you're so emotionally invested. Like, I had to stop talking politics to my parents because I just would start crying. Like, that's what happens when I argue with my parents. I just immediately, I'm like, I'm in trouble. I better start crying.
Yeah.
And it's not healthy. Mm-hmm. So I stopped doing that.
No, I feel you. I mean, me and my dad talk about the weather a lot now.
It's like, it's
65,
what about in Longview?
Yeah.
That's fair, though. I mean, you can't... The personal proselytization is just not... That's not where it's at. I don't know. It's not going to be much.
I know. Well, and I started realizing that it was, like, exhausting to him, too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it's like... When he stops, like, fighting back with the, like, snappy comebacks, and he just, like, sighs and looks distressed, like... my son has lost his way, you know, and then I'm just like, what am I doing this for, man? Like, what am I trying to prove? I went really hard one time, like in 2021 when the uprisings were happening.
Yeah.
I was like trying to teach him about the concept of privilege. And he was so mad about it. Like, he was like, wait, you're trying to tell me that, like, I'm privileged in some way? Like, I'm a big dude. When I walk down the street, people walk the other way. I'm like,
what?
That's kind of a privilege.
That's kind of a privilege.
I mean, yeah.
It's like safety.
Yeah, and that's right. I mean, that's when I started being like, you ever heard about intersectionalism? You know? Like,
obviously the next move.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
See, Kyle the video told me, I was saying, like, oh, I love going on walks with Copper because I feel safer. I feel like I can walk around our neighborhood, which can get a little sketchy sometimes.
Yeah, I feel that.
But I feel okay because I've got a big, not big, but, you know, he barks loud. He can get scary.
Yeah, he's intense.
Yeah.
He's an intense dog. People know not to fuck with me. Mm-hmm. And Kyle goes, I feel like I look more safe with Copper. I look like less of a creepo if I have a dog with me. And so it's okay if I'm like walking where like women are nearby. Mm-hmm. Like no one's going to think I'm being a creep.
Yeah,
It's so, I'm just like, I've literally never thought about that. Like, has not crossed my mind.
Like trying to be not scary?
Yeah, I'm always like trying to be scary. Like, not scary. I'm very bad at it, so.
Well, yeah, I see this a lot, like, more femme presenting people, the thing they have to do in public is try to be like standoffish, try to develop mechanisms to be defensive and like get out of the way of people and you know, look beefier or and then men are trying to do the opposite.
Yeah.
Like male leaning people, masculine presenting people are like
look weird.
I want to look cute and sweet, and I don't want to look like a big scary dude. You know, I'm gonna cross the street if I'm like walking behind someone, or so you know, crazy. It's like. But I get it. I mean, it makes sense dialectically.
Yeah, like, but then you have to you have to play the balance of your femme presenting of like you have to look really mean, but if they do approach you, you then have to switch on a dime and be like, hi, because like it'll get you, a lot of
disarming.
It's a mind fuck.
I'm bad at this. I basically just mean mug the whole time. But I will do the street crossing thing, but that's like it.
Yeah.
I don't pay attention to the rest of it. I'm like oblivious. I'm just like...
Yeah. Well, you're probably saving yourself a lot of mental distress by doing that.
Probably.
You know, I mean...
I guess. I mean, I'm like, you know, around here it's whatever. But like, you know, I've lived in other places and just... I'd be fucking drunk at like...
Dude, midnight. I remember this. You, like, we were texting or something, and you're just like, yeah, I'm just walking around. I'm like, my bro, it's 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Why are you outside your house?
Yeah, I was like, it's fine.
And I was like, it's not okay.
Yeah, no, I do dumb shit like that too. I mean, like,
I can't imagine.
Walk around at 2 a.m. Nothing
occurred to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't sleep unless I know my, like, alarm is set and, like, Copper is near me. Uh-huh. Like, I play the game, Copper, let's go check every corner of my house.
Nice, nice, yeah.
Which is stupid. That's obviously too much, but that's the way my brain works.
No, I feel you. I mean, I've lived in the same place for a really long time now. It's just, like, a single bedroom. But I think earlier on, I was, like, checking the closet and behind doors and... Did I leave the door open? I can't remember. Dang it. Like, you know, like,
yeah.
But now I'm kind of just like, no, I can trust myself that I locked it when I left.
You ever do that though? And you're like, why am I checking this? Like,
yeah.
If I left the door open, why isn't all my stuff gone?
Yeah.
Why would someone go in there and then be like, I'm going to kill
this. I'm going to walk past these like two MacBooks here and go straight up to the bedroom, the place where everyone keeps their valuables, obviously.
Yeah,
yeah, just like, I want to do some axe murder.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Like, okay. Great plan.
Yeah.
Anything else?
got to the utopian hour. We got into the...
The paranoia hour?
Yeah.
You said you had another thing, didn't you?
I do, yeah. What's it's it? Just a discussion about retirement.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's go.
I'd like that. I'd like to retire.
I would, too.
It'd be nice.
It'd be great.
You know, people should retire earlier.
For real.
Like in their 30s.
Yes.
Normally. Not just because they're really rich or whatever. Right.
Well, yeah. I think to do that in our current society, you would have to be really rich.
Well, of course, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's what the Wall Street Journal was saying here. And I didn't read the rest of the article. Mm-hmm. The headline was kind of my springboard to talk about the bigger picture, more utopian hours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Drawing our contrast with capitalism's values here. The headline is this. The new magic number for retirement. I'm going to actually do a blank here, okay? The new magic number for retirement is blank. Here's what it tells us. What do you guys think? The new magic number, well, I assume that you have to have saved up by the point that you're retiring.
Well, I've heard before...
The number to raise.
Like, I thought it was a number as in age.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Money.
It's going to be so much.
I have an assertion... Well, I've heard before, and this is just a ballpark, that you need $2 million to retire.
That would have been my guess.
But I don't know if that's changed.
I think it's five.
$2 million, $5 million... You guys are both going to, if you aim for that and succeed, have a nice, balmy, easy retirement.
Oh, that's good.
Okay.
Yeah. It would take $1.46 million to retire comfortably, according to a recent survey. They just surveyed people? Like, they don't know.
Wait, how
they
that's not an economic that's factor. Goofy. That's not...
Well...
That's not science.
Like, are they doing the math and being like, these are my expenses?
Yeah.
Maybe it's a survey of expenses and spending.
Is it a survey of, like, retirement?
And then they did the math?
Like, you know,
HR. No, actually, it's better than that.
Okay.
$1.46 million, that's what people said.
Okay.
That's up from $1.27 million a year ago.
Okay.
Huh.
And over $1 million more than the average survey participant's nest egg.
Okay, that's not great.
Well, yeah, that actually is pretty realistic.
Yeah.
An economist at the New School for Social Research in New York City said people don't really know how much money they will need in retirement and often overestimate it.
Mm.
Most families with lower incomes likely need far less, she said. So don't worry, you don't have to have $1.46 million. Okay. You can have a little less. But...
Well, what is comfortable?
What age are we talking about retiring?
Yeah.
And she also said if you're lower income, you don't have to worry about it. She's just like, stay poor, you fuckers?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
Yeah, she says, if you're living in a shitty, you know, a smaller house,
stay
less
in
stuff.
Into retirement.
Yeah, if you continue to do that, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
And it just, to me, brought this, because, you know, you also have the alternatives of, like, what happens to all the people who have, like, $1 million less than that, like they were just saying?
Yeah.
Or, you know, who barely have anything when they come to retirement, like... You know, capitalism basically says, you know, if you are working paycheck to paycheck, not off of one or two, but three paychecks, and, you know, you can barely make ends meet, and you have to put, you know, money out to you know, make sure your kids get through life and pay your medical bills and every, you're a regular person, that is to say, then you get to what would be retirement age, when your body's been falling apart for 30 years by that point. Yeah.
Medical bills are not going to get cheaper.
No.
You're going to have more problems.
That's why that was one of the few things, you know, they were initially trying to do national health care, and they were like, well, fine, you won't do that. Can we do old people health care?
Yeah.
Like, they need it. They need it a lot.
Yeah. Fucking falling apart.
You're reaching that age and everything, and our capitalism just says, like, hopefully you prepared, because if not, sucks to be you.
Yeah.
You need to keep working until you probably reach an early grave, because that's what's happening.
It really is, yeah, borrowing time from the other end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof. And it's, you know, it was just grim to see that, and just as a cold calculation of just like, this is what you need, we don't get it tough. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of what we say in our system, and it made me think like, well, I guess it's one of the ones we haven't really broached as a full-on topic of like, what does retirement and old age and everything look like in our utopian hour? Since we're doing utopian hours, what does that look like?
I think it's
in the commune.
I think it's obviously much more available. It's just like, hey, are you particularly feeling run down to the point of even if, like, let's say you have a chronic illness, like, that's okay if you can't work too. Like, we just take care of people if they can't work. But that isn't their definition of a society member.
Like, there's a whole medical qualification that's, it's not like it's the only way, but like, if you have some medical condition happen, it's like, yeah, okay, you're 45, but you're done, dude. Like, you don't have to do it. You can if you don't
care. If you feel up to it or you want to and you want accommodations, we can do that. But like, you're not going to get kicked out on the street or whatever.
You know?
I think it's just the case. If you can't work, you can't work.
Yeah.
We're kind of just trusting everyone to still work.
That's a big part of our, I guess, we were talking earlier about how we differ, you know, from our spouses and their view of human nature. Is that I don't think that both of us seem to think that whenever we take away the guy ripping you off, right? Like, the whole reason that you're working a job or whatever, someone's paying you more, someone paying you less than what you're doing, value-wise. If that guy's not there and you're just doing stuff
that you would stop, well,
you're good stuff. And your community is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you take away the thing that makes everything bad, yeah, I would fucking love to work.
Right.
There's no need to work.
So there's less
abuse.
I would
do some shitty jobs if I knew it was benefiting people directly.
I do, like, essentially shitty jobs, like, freelance on my own. Of just, like, this is not a shitty job to read for you. I like it, but, like, in some respects, I do deprive myself sometimes just to, like, read more stuff for the pod. Or not even just for the pod, just, like, for my own stupid interest of, like, going down a rabbit hole.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's not really beneficial to anyone. I'm not helping the commune or anything. Just my own focus, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, humans have this capacity to, like, push ourselves to work.
To learn and grow.
Yeah, with a strong enough motivation that you could compare it side by side with, like, having to work to be able to make enough money to eat and survive. To where, like, yeah, there is a motivation factor there. It's like, we're not just going to all sit around.
I think very few people would do that.
Yeah.
And if they did, that would be a sign of, like, hey, are you, like, doing okay mentally? You know?
Yeah, I mean, well, this is, that's kind of, like, the classic argument, right? You know, it's like, oh, no one wants to work anymore.
Yep.
And this assumption that if there wasn't someone to crack the whip or money or medical bills or whatever, that no one would. And I think you're right. I think that people find pleasure in work. And even if it's hard work, like, you get done with it, it's like a release and it's good. It feels good, you know? You feel like you accomplished something. And I think if you knew you were benefiting your community over, you know, the CEO, something parasite. I was one of the leader insults. It was like a useless parasite or something. Yeah. And I was like, damn, that's like every CEO. It's like, wow, that's perfect.
That's their new job title.
Yeah.
Negative parasite.
Yeah.
That's from Solidarity Forever.
It's
not we hold in common with the greedy parasite.
Ooh. I like that. Like, I've always been, like, really split on interests. So, like, I always just want to do a lot of different things, which most people in my life I think discourage.
No, that's yeah. a thing too.
Fellow dabbler.
Yes, let's go. Yeah. And then like something in my brain, probably an amalgamation of everyone's advice to me throughout my life goes, no, you gotta pick something, Kenny. Yep. You know, you can't just willy nilly go around and do stuff. But like, I gotta say, the idea of like doing like small amounts of like four different jobs throughout the day is so appealing to me. I think about that like daily.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding. Like something that's a little bit manual labor, but you know, you do it for like a couple hours.
Like that's your exercise.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I'm out in the garden.
Yeah.
Here I go.
I would eat that up, you know, and then I don't know, like wiring or something or yeah. like, you know, I would love to learn a bunch of trades like that. But like my cousin right now is getting or has been trained for the last couple of years by my uncle, who's a master electrician.
Oh, cool.
And I just talked to him a few weeks ago and he said that she is like at the point now where when they show up to the job site, he doesn't have to say anything. She just goes and does what needs to be done.
That's
which
awesome.
Is so yeah. sick, you know, but yeah. also I don't think like in that current system that I could be like, oh yeah, I just want to learn it because like I like it.
Yeah.
And I want to do it for like a couple hours yeah, every now and then, you know, yeah. and it's like, but that kind of fits into my idea of like ideal learning circumstances where you just kind of learn what you want to throughout your life, your whole life, mm-hmm. because people love acquiring knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
and
awesome.
It's okay to like yeah. switch careers after however yes. many years. Like it's not like a, are you okay? Are you having midlife crisis situation?
Yeah.
It's like, cool. Great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
There'd be, I don't know, you know, there's an element of projection of like, what percentage of people would be like me or whatever? Mm-hmm. There'd be a lot of people that would be like, yeah, I want to dabble. I want to kind yeah. of vary
like
it
really
up.
That's really common. I mean, it's not insanely common, but it is. Like, I think you'd still have specialists. I think you still have people like, no, I'm
I
into bugs. That's all
yeah.
I'm into. Or
yeah,
whatever
yeah.
it is.
Bugs.
You know?
Uh-huh. They do
I don't know why I would jump to bugs.
They do the bug program on TV.
The, yes. Like, oh, I watch the bug show.
It's like we're cats at the yeah. window. Cats love the bug show.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, there's a spectrum, right, of
totally.
Focus
yeah.
and generality.
How many trades someone is a jack of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
so there would be kind of be, I don't know, to me, this reminds me of The Dispossessed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You because then you can just, you can kind of go and sign up at the jobs board and kind,
yeah.
of, set, you kind of, like you're saying, mix and match your schedules mm-hmm. and be like, you know, I want to do, you know, a month of this.
Mm-hmm.
I want to learn to do that, so I'm going to sign up for this brigade.
Yes.
Whatever. And
that'd be so sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the cool elements of one of the elements of communist projects that always really inspires us on the show is like the initial, like non-religious, but like crusades, the initial
yeah.
missions
yeah.
to, you know, go to put the brigades together and do shit, like do
yeah.
literacy campaigns,
mm-hmm.
do, you know, build hospitals, healthcare.
Direct action. All
yeah,
that,
like,
yeah.
like, yeah, the masses are all of a sudden unleashed to fix
to get
the
shit
problem.
Done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like,
sounds so nice.
That, I think, would be crazy to be a part of. To
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, on a ground level of, like, hey, do you kind of know first aid? Like, no. Like, okay, I'll teach you.
Yes.
Come with me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like, that would be crazy.
And that's, you know, a big part of, we a lot of times we worry about how we're going to recruit. You know, enough
yeah.
people to do this and whatever. And that beauty, I think, of, you know, Marxist Lenin Maoism is that you don't have to reach a critical mass of 51% of people. Because all you have to have is enough people in your country that agree that shit sucks and a lot of things should be made better
mm-hmm.
in generally your direction to where if you take power, then you can say we're gonna do the thing that most people want to do. We're gonna make everyone literate. We're gonna make free national health care for everybody happen.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of people, you know, left and center and even right that want to do that.
Yeah.
Yes.
That we could say like,
absolutely.
You know, don't pay attention to the fact that like, you know, it's the communists doing this.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Don't,
we're gonna
don't
be, you know,
that.
Doing all this crazy shit and like they'll jump, you know, jump in to do that, and then afterward. Then you can, you know, go and travel through even, you know, Appalachia and the Deep South and anywhere else you want to go. And they'll say, well, yeah, you know, the communists, I don't have a problem with them. They came in and the clinic down there, they built that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we had these little rural schools. They didn't have any money. And now we have all these resources. And they came in and did that, and it was, you know, my father that was in there. He, you know, he never had a good word to say to them about them, but he was in there building it with them. Like, yeah, you know, like, so you sick. Have...
Yeah.
And these are the stories from, like, rural Cuba.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
places that hadn't, you know, nothing to do with mm-hmm. with communism, really. And but they were like, we...
They can
we
see will the benefits.
Yeah, we'll protect them... You know, when the United States want to send their invaders in to take us down, like, we'll protect them to the last man, because, like...
They did this thing for us.
Yeah. They're the reasons we used to have to carry everyone, you know, the village would get together. Someone's sick and needs to go to the hospital. They'd have to carry them en masse to the hospital.
Jesus.
Miles and miles away. And that's have, like, teams of people to do this.
Wow.
That's all they had. Yeah. And now they have doctors traveling throughout and everything, and, like, you know, that's...
More hospitals, I assume.
Yeah, that's like the, you know, yeah. I guess that's how the revolution can do the job, I guess, of recruiting as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through action.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
And I think with retirement, I think it's so dependent on the individual and what it is they're doing, their particular health circumstance, like their mental health, like... Mm-hmm. It should be a much more individualized decision and not just like, let me play this math equation perfectly so I don't get fucked, mm-hmm. you know?
And and what they want to do.
Yeah, you know, that it's too. I mean, someone might not want to retire. That's fucking fine. Yeah,
no, yeah. I've heard that so many times where people are like, oh yeah, I'll retire, but then like I'm going to like do these like 8 other jobs, you know, in kind of a smaller capacity. And it's like, I don't know. I personally like... love the idea of just not doing anything. Yeah, like I think ever since I was a little kid, I always just wanted to like chill and do nothing. Like, you know, throughout my life I've found fulfillment in working in certain aspects and different times, different ways, but there's some part of me that like needs that to survive.
Yeah.
Like, which is why I really cherish my weekends just vegging and watching whatever. I'm just watching a ton of inane anime right now, and it's awesome. I'm watching this series about soccer.
Oh, hell yeah.
Is it like the big soccer anime the 80s or something?
Captain Tsubasa.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I think it's the remake of it that started in 2018.
Oh.
But I think it follows the same stuff. It's so goofy, though. It's like... It's just like anime power battles.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you know, they're like, they'll kick like and they'll kick the ball together and they're like, and it's like, oh no, he's too powerful. Like, it's so good. Oh, I just love it. But it's also just goofy. Like, what am I doing? You know,
sports animes are crazy. I heard we're getting a, a Yuri and it's golf based.
Whoa.
It's just like a lesbian golf show. And I'm like, okay, sure.
Let's go. And I mean, it's weird. I'd struggle with that because it's like consumption based kind of. I'm like, what am I doing if I'm just consuming and not putting anything back, you know? And I guess you make the calculation that at a certain age, you're like, I don't have anything to give back.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've been giving it for my whole life, and I'll let the younger, more capable people give, you know, and I'll just take now, I guess, you know? And maybe that's kind of a reductive way to look at it, but...
I mean, you do see, it's pretty common with seniors that they get depressed when they retire because they do feel purposeless.
Yeah.
Something they've been told is their purpose for years and years and years is to work and have a career, and you take that away, they're like, well, who the fuck am I?
Yeah.
So, I think, you know, even our mom's considering retiring relatively soon, and, like, she has expressed anxiety about that, and I'm like, yeah, that's gonna be tricky for you to figure out. Like, you should probably, like, have some ideas about what you think you want to do, and I'm hoping that in, you know, utopia, we have a system where it's a little more accommodating of that, of, like, there's less guilt involved with consumption, there's less guilt involved with work. It's like, hey, like, we're here to take care of you. Like, we take care of kids. Like, you're not, and, you know, not in an infantilizing way, you know.
Yeah.
But. No, but there's, it's not transactional in the sense of, like, you have to be giving as much, as much as you're taking or whatever. And it's like, we need something that more holistically honors the life cycle to be a little hippie about it.
Yeah, you're so right.
Yeah, cells in our body, they, you know, grow, they do good shit for us, they die off, and this is just part of the
cycle.
We are all part of this body together, and not in like the fascist sense of like, you know, the shoe goes on the foot or whatever. But that sense that, like, I mean, we all play this role, we live and die, and like, exactly what you're saying is, as kids, like, you're fed and you're housed and everything, mm-hmm. and your job is just to grow up and be a human.
Yeah.
And when you're old, you're
a chill.
Yeah, you're fed and you're housed, and your job is just to be a human. You became a human.
Great job.
You produced, you know, and mm-hmm. once you're past doing that, it's like me. Actually, at that point, your job is not to die now, but to die. Mm-hmm. Like to figure out the rest of your life. And live and walk off into whatever comes.
Damn, I really wish we were talking about next week's books.
Can't wait to hear about it.
That's, I think, a healthier way to approach it. Whereas now we're, like you said, more feelings of guilt and mm-hmm. I don't fit into the main values of my society and everything. Yeah. And that's because our societies our values are sort of inhuman.
Yeah.
Like anti-human in mm-hmm. so many ways.
I mean, I was watching a show, adding another show to the media list this week, called Platonic. I think I told you about it.
Yeah.
It's on Apple TV, unfortunately, but whatever. My like commune of internet streaming services covers it, so. and it stars Seth Rogen.
Okay.
And Rose Byrne, who's like this Australian actress. If you've ever seen the movie Neighbours, that's the couple there. They are like best friends who reunite after several years. She's a housewife and she is really struggling. Like, there's this joke, I think it's the first episode, she's hanging out with another mom friend and they're dropping off their kids, and they say something like, oh, we're invisible, we're middle-aged women, like nobody fucking talks to us, you know, like, and they like say hi to like a group of passing men and they just like don't stop. And like, she struggles with like getting back into the workforce after like 13 years of taking care of her kids and shit. Mm. And like, you can really tell like she is like losing, she has lost her identity and does not know how to come back from it. And it's a really good show. And like, I liked the kinds of discussions that it prompted, like between me and Kyle and stuff, of like, hey, I don't want to end up like that. You know?
Yeah.
But that is something I think that is terrifying, is like, a parent of like, you do kind of experience, like I've heard it called like an ego death kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you know, I talked to my therapist about it, and she's like, you don't have to, like, that's not necessarily going to happen to you, you know, like not everyone has to like totally lose themselves in parenting.
Yeah.
But I think under our system where, you know, people are pressured to become a stay-at-home parent because if you don't make enough money, you are deemed the less valuable one.
And you
that's
know,
what happens.
Costs for childcare and stuff
like
that.
It's like a mortgage.
You're going to have to do it yourself if you can't afford any of that.
Exactly.
You know?
So
your whole life becomes it. You
then
know?
It's so easy to get sucked into it.
Yeah.
Not noticing Rose Byrne waving hi to
you. Dude, right? She's so hot.
It's insane. Yeah.
Yeah. They're distractingly hot because she's married in the show too. Mm-hmm. And he's also extremely hot. I'm just like, how are people not just like stopping on the street like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Are they actors?
Exactly. Like, I'm like taken out of it almost. And like, they try to make her look kind of dumpy.
Mm.
Like, they do her hair in this weird little top bun and stuff. That's and like, so put her in a cardigan.
But she's like, wear a sweater. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, she's still extremely hot, guys. I don't know what you're trying to do here. Like, you can't just put her in clothes from The Gap and call it a day.
Mm-hmm. But no, I was thinking about this the other day. I saw some TikToks or whatever. People were like, oh, you know, when you have kids, it's kind of annoying because then you don't get to watch like anything you like. You just like watch kids shows and stuff.
Our parents did not watch kids shows.
Okay, this is what I
saw so many bits of the X-Files.
I was telling Abby essentially this. I was like, I think our parents did a pretty good job of not doing that. Like, they watched their own shit. Like,
we
would play and stuff, but like, they were watching whatever, like Star Trek and stuff. Mm. That when I was very little, when that interested it, you know, it wasn't for me. So I was like, I think we could manage that. You know,
like don't watch anything just like all out fluff fest.
Yeah, I can't
something.
Watch like as many HBO.
Yeah, don't watch the HBO. Everything else I think is okay.
Yeah. There's a line, you know, you've got to draw, I guess. You've got to be, you can't just like Mad Men style parent or whatever.
Just be like, goodbye.
Yeah. See you guys later. We're drinking and smoking. Get out of here.
Like, yeah.
You know.
But, well, I think also like the proliferation of screens has made it so everyone can watch their own thing. So,
yeah.
That's the thing. You got to keep them off that screen as long as you fucking can.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. I don't know. I, think I'm going to be kind of Luddite in that
regard. I think I am too. I think
my parents were that way. They were like, you know, we want you to be present.
Yeah.
We don't want you to have like earbuds or a Game Boy or a phone for as long as they could. Yeah. You know? And then it was like, you know, my friends had them and I would be over there like, yeah, I love this. Why don't I have this? Dang it.
That's the thing. You can only go so long.
Well, and it's funny too, because then you start like, I do think that I'm like, this is so dumb, but I'm like worse at video games than some of my friends.
Yeah.
Because something in my brain didn't develop the same
as
theirs.
That's hilarious.
But also, I mean, all of that's just practice and stuff. Like, and not that it, you know, matters a huge amount, but I mean, playing games is a whole lot more fun when you can do them.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And if, I guess it's, what I'm trying to say though is just that in a world of increasing screens, maybe that's an education that's worthwhile for children in a way.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe, you know, getting to it early, I don't fucking know, but maybe that, like, curbs, like, being attached to it later on in life, you know?
I don't know, because...
I don't know for sure.
I mean,
not
you've
in our
experienced
system.
This,
yeah.
Because I a lot has been kind of written about how, like, our generation's really the only one that knows how to, like, actually work a computer.
Yeah.
Whereas,
yeah.
like, younger kids don't know how it works. They just are like, well, it didn't work. I give up.
They are bad.
Yeah, like, can't locate a folder to open it, you know?
Or, yeah. like, basic troubleshooting.
Yeah.
Just, like...
They give up immediately.
Can we turn this off? You're not connecting the Wi-Fi. Can we turn the Wi-Fi off part? And then, okay, yeah, just turn that back on.
Uh-huh.
You're good.
Yeah, like, it's...
That's not all of them, teen listeners. It's not all of you.
It's not all. I think this is a little younger than current teens, I would assume. I'm not sure. I wonder what that is. I wonder if it's, like, because it's so user-friendly, like, 90% of the time, that when it does go wrong, you're just not prepared?
Yeah.
Okay, because we're used to janky shit of, like, the fucking router's out again.
Right. We didn't just have also, like, very clean iPhones the whole time. Like, we, you know, had other varieties of smartphones and stuff. We had the old Windows computer type stuff.
Maybe that's it, too, if we had to get used to so many different iterations of things that we were used to relearning tech.
Mm-hmm. Right, and now it's smooth. Like, you get a new phone...
It doesn't feel like you got a new phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting to see how people engage with technology as it changes. And because I grew up with... I was in a Mac household and an Apple household.
Yeah.
I used to call my dad a Mac bigot, you know, just because he'd be like, oh, you know, Windows is so crappy, you can't, like, do anything on it, and it's like...
It's weird.
It wasn't really my experience. Yeah. It hasn't been, you know, and I do think that some of that, like, Mac user-friendly-ism made me, like, just really, like, clueless when it came to, like... I don't know, doing shit on a PC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, like,
PC is definitely like you're thrown in the fucking deep end.
Yeah, yeah. And
there's Linux.
Yeah, you're right.
Jesus, we're not going that far.
But I will say, I learned. Like, I had, I got a Windows machine when that's what I could afford.
Yeah.
To do work on, and now I know a lot more about it because I had to do a lot of Googling. Yeah, I do wonder. I do wonder if some user friendly stuff can, you know, detract. But if you really get down to it, any operating system, even if it's really basic, is a user like overlay of what's going on in the background.
Yeah,
it's
we're not out here coding our phone to turn it on.
Exactly. We're not out here typing ones and zeros.
Yeah.
We're in the
mainframe. No one has to look in binary here. We're all good.
You have to wear sunglasses, though. Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah,
obviously.
If you're doing that.
Need green lighting.
Uh-huh.
I think the bigger obstacle to overcome, you were saying earlier that, you know, we got into the troubleshooting aspect or figuring out how it works, but like being able to use technology in a way that's not addictive and stuff.
Yes.
I mean, a big part of that is
it's
like liberating ourselves from like the capitalists that are intentionally making it addictive.
That's
the thing. The UI is not neutral.
Yes.
The UI is leading you to make decisions.
Yeah. So. And I will mindlessly scroll and I start getting this like sinking feeling of like, I'm so bored of this, but I can't stop.
There's this,
you know?
It is a weird, like, sunk cost fallacy thing of you're like, well, maybe the next one will be.
Yes.
Right.
Because you feel bad, you spent so much time on it, so you're like, well, this will justify.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll pull away and be like, I'm obviously bored of this. I'm going to find something else to do. And I, like, swipe around a little of other things. I'm like, Yeah, but maybe there's a better video to watch. Yeah. Like, I might just go hop back on to TikTok. You know?
Yeah.
The other day, I realized I was sitting with an open book in my lap and my phone, and I was just on the phone. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? I was supposed to be reading.
Yeah, sometimes I'll be watching a show, and then, like, I just, like, pick up my phone, and I see some notification, and then I get stuck in a hole, and then I pause the show because... Because
you're
I
on
can't,
the phone.
Yeah, I just, like, I can't... I'm not paying attention to the show, and I'm like, why is this more important to me? But you're right. I mean, this is, like, engineered to keep you in the loop. Y'all ever tried dopamine detoxing?
Ooh, no. What is that?
It's basically just, like, stopping yourself... abstaining from things that are like quick dopamine hits for like a period of time, you know, right. Just like, you know, just not looking on social media, not like getting used to being in silence.
Ooh.
Not listening to music or podcasts.
Ooh.
It's hard. It's really, really hard.
That is hard.
I've got so many little things like that in my life right now that I've gone off the deep end of the other direction. But
that is,
like,
that is how I trick myself into doing really mundane shit.
Yeah. Like,
literally just like, I have to change the laundry over. That means I have to go upstairs. If I put on a podcast while I do it, though, I will feel better about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, same. It makes it go so much more smoothly, yeah. You know. But I guess this kind of plays into, like, meditation and stuff, too. It's just, like, trying to just do one task.
Yeah.
And focus on the task. Not let your mind wander. And also not be, like, upset or happy about it.
Yeah.
Either way, really. Uh-huh. But just kind of be in, like, a pleasant, neutral, like... I'm doing the dishes.
Yeah.
I'm scrubbing this bowl.
That is really,
you know?
Nice. Like, when I do,
yes.
Do that. Like, sometimes I'll do it accidentally just because I'm really focused on something.
It's
and I'm
freeing,
like, oh,
that's
dude. That's nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And I notice when I'm in what I call writing season, which is whenever I'm busy outlining a book,
yeah.
That is what I do. I am much more likely to sit in silence.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I fucking need it, or else it ain't going to get written.
Mm-hmm.
Or it gets written right before I'm falling asleep and I have to wake up at 3 a.m. and be like, okay, let me type my outline.
I've only seen the positive slant of that, of like, oh, you're doing the dishes, like, appreciate.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, that you are cleaning this vessel that, you know, held your food and you nourished you.
You're going to get, like, to use it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Like, you know, you're taking a shower, like, appreciate, like, the feel of it and all this and getting to be clean.
Yes.
But I haven't seen the neutral interpretation of it.
Yeah, I think seeing it positively is perfectly fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
It's like you're just noticing.
Yeah, yeah. You don't... It's like supposed to be devoid of judgment or whatever.
Yeah.
Positive or negative, you know? Which, I don't know. Sometimes that's not very fun.
Yeah.
You know, I mean? Sure. It's I think that's like a good way to, like, clear the tumultuousness out of your mind if you can, but...
I like that, because I struggle with being present a lot. Like, I was trying to explain to Kyle, I'm like, I basically live 5 years in the future all the time. I'm just like, I am always working towards a very long-term goal.
Yeah.
And it does not help that I, like, do stuff in publishing, which is, like, that's just their fucking timeline is that far away.
Yeah.
So I'm always just like, well, when that's done, then I have to do this, and then I have to do this. Like, that's just how my brain is. And I think for a long time it was, like, partially a defense mechanism of, like, I wasn't a super happy teen, and so I was like, well, eventually I won't be here. And so, like, I lived in the future then, too.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm reaching this point where I'm like, oh, I'm actually personally quite happy, but I don't know how to sit still and be the fuck in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's really weird. Like, I, like, have to make an effort to do that, and, like, the stupidest things help. Like, I noticed I was, like, probably 20% happier during Christmas. And I was like, why the fuck am I this happy? And I realized it was the lighting. It was the goddamn lighting. I was just like, it's real cozy in here, and it makes me appreciate my house more.
Aww.
So I started lighting candles all the time.
There you go.
You like torch lighting.
Yeah. Like, there's something like fucking caveman about that, of just flicker light good.
Yeah.
My optimal is like all the lights that aren't on now, I guess. Uh-huh. Like this lamp and these guys. And
we're big into, like, ambient lighting, I think.
Yeah, I call it mood lighting.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it's just so much nice, warmer lights, you know?
Yeah.
That's nice, too.
Oh,
it's like...
Light.
It's good stuff.
The way that helps me, it's a pretty stupid thought process, I think, but it does zoom me in on stuff in the present moment, is I pretend that I am admiring the graphics in a video game.
Oh, hell yeah.
That is really
I love
this.
And I'm like, damn, like, this is really rendered well, and, like, it really feels kind of nice and stuff. And then I'm
so...
like, I'm really there. Like,
yeah.
It's like... But I imagine that I'm playing a first-person game or something, and I'm like whoa, this is pretty cool.
That's kind of lovely.
Like, it focuses me in more on it for some reason.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, that's like, that is so eerily similar to how they teach you to meditate.
It is.
Like literally, like, you're sitting there, you're like, they're like, okay, well, notice, first start internal. Be like, notice your breathing. Mm-hmm. Notice, like, hot and cold. Notice the feel of the air on your skin. Notice the sounds around you. No, you know, you can do all this with your eyes closed. Yeah. You know, you're not even looking at the graphics. You're like, you're just like getting every little bit that you can hold in your mind.
Yeah, you're just like, damn, this game is realistic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that is, I mean, that's a really good technique for bringing yourself into the present. Yeah, that's so
like
cool.
One of the ways to combat panic attacks too is like, yes, five stuff. Things you can see. Yeah, four things you can touch, and then you go through all your senses.
Damn, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, are we ready to wrap up?
Think so.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
It's almost 11.
Yeah, we solved all the problems.
We solved all the problems. Yeah, we did. We sure did. Welcome to our utopia. Next week, we'll be covering two books, but they're real short, so you'll have plenty of time to read them. I've almost read them in a day. You can read one a day very easily.
They read very fast.
Yes.
So cool. If you don't read that fast, give yourself some more time.
So they're called A Psalm for the Wild Built and A Prayer for the Crown Shy, both by Becky Chambers. They are some wonderful sci-fi novellas that talk about a distant future. I think a different world, too. It's got to be. Never mind. It's definitely a different world. It ain't Earth, so don't get too excited. And it's really lovely. I think it's going to have some good conversations about, like, eco-socialism, as well as just kind of communalism in general.
Yeah. What it means to be human, sentient. Yeah.
There's a lot of philosophy in it, and I fucking hate philosophy, and I fucking love this book, so.
Wow, we turned that page a little bit towards the end of this one.
I think so. That's what I was saying. Segue. I was like,
yeah, that's great.
I have points to make, and I can't do it yet.
Yeah. All right.
So this was so fun, y'all. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Anytime.
All right. We'll talk to y'all listeners next week.
All right. Adios.
See ya. Hey there, comrades. Just jumping in to remind you of all of our social media. We are on Twitter at Teach Communism, Instagram at Teach Me Communism. You can shoot us an email. That's teachmecommunism@gmail.com. Any of those places are good to send us an episode suggestion or a question, anything you think would be useful feedback for us, or just your admiration. If you want to admire us in a public manner, and you should, you can go to Apple Podcasts to give us a review. It is the best way to help people find the show. Love when people write and review us. Please do both. We are also on YouTube if that's how you prefer to listen to podcasts, or if you know someone that's the only way they'll listen to podcasts, send them to our page. And we have a Patreon. For $5 a month, you get access to our notes for each week's episode, including the backlog of notes, which is a very handy resource for up-and-coming commies. And at the end of the year, all of the funds from Patreon will be given to local mutual aid in the DFW area. So, ain't going to line our pockets. Finally, we have merch. Check us out at TeePublic. You can find shirts and I believe also stickers and magnets and all kinds of fun stuff with catchphrases from the show or episode art, stuff like that. The link to that store is in the show notes, so check that out. Okay, that's all the internet. Join us next time for another episode of Teach Me Communism, where the class struggle is always in session. Bye, y'all.